This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And extra, extra. We all are fired. I got it like that. Tuck my neck in and
Place to Be Nation, welcome to Clotheslines and Headlines. I am your co-host, Steve Willey, taking the wheel to start off episode 16 of your source for current professional wrestling talk around the country, around the continent, around the world. We have an incredibly loaded show tonight, even more so than usual. Of course, it's January, so as I was looking around WWE.com today, you can't call it a pay-per-view. You need to call it a premier event, and that is the Royal Rumble, my favorite event of the year. We also have a bevy of returning guests to talk about other things around the world of professional wrestling, specifically 205 Live, a topic that we visit quite frequently here, the recent big events in CWF Mid-Atlantic, quickly becoming a PTBN favorite and a pro-wrestling-only favorite. And then we're going to have one debut from across the Atlantic to talk some UK pro graps. Now, usually I would introduce my co-partners, my partners, JT Rosero and Nate Milton. Nate Milton will be with us later on. And JT, he's here in body, but he is not here in spirit. I believe, do you have a serious case of explosive stool or diarrhea there, Justin? Oh, he's on mute. So he will be he's going to be running the machines tonight, and we're going to have a hazmat team consisting of probably Dan McGinn to come in, and they're going to wipe it down.
D'Amato.
Oh, it's going to be D'Amato's usually the one that make the mess. As you hear, it takes an entire nation, Place to Be Nation, to make this show. So we brought in a frequent contributor to help me start off, talk some WWE, talk some headlines from an undisclosed location somewhere in the United States of America, Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad, thank you so much for joining me.
Coming to you live from beautiful Milledgeville, Georgia today, Steve.
I have no idea where that is.
In the middle of Georgia.
I know Atlanta, and I know whatever other city my wife's company is in, and that's about it. Savannah,
yeah, maybe Augusta. Those are, besides that.
Well, thank you for joining us. We sent our other crew of miscreants down to find you, and you were readily available. You sound great. You look good. And, our big news in WWE is the announcement of our first inductee of the year's Hall of Fame class, and talking about our Olympic hero, Kurt Angle. Did you have any inkling, Chad, coming into this week that this was a possibility, that Kurt was going to come back?
Well, I mean, I think you have been hearing for quite about 2 years now,
right,
that there was a possibility that Angle might return to WWE, or I'd say really since like the Jarrett fallout when all that happened from TNA the first time, and now he's done came back, and Angle was still there. He did the retirement from TNA or whatever. So that kind of amplified things. But, yeah, I didn't know it would be announced this week, and it makes sense for him to be in the Hall of Fame in 2017 in the headliner spot, but it kind of took me by surprise, and I was excited when the news broke. I guess that was, Monday afternoon?
Yeah, and this is it's a name that has been bandied about, with more seriously the last couple of years, but it's kind of like the Undertaker-Sting match for that was rumored for every year. Everyone would get excited that, is this the year? Is this the year it's going to happen? And Kurt Angle coming back was, especially as he took a step back out of TNA, wrestling less often, was always a question. And, for me, I always thought that in terms of what he did poorly during WWE and TNA, in terms of his, substance abuse issues, was pretty low compared to some of the other things that people who have made the Hall of Fame have done in the past. So I'm surprised it took this long, and I'm happy for him. I don't know if, and I can ask you this too, if you have any interest in seeing him wrestling. I don't know if considering his concussion history and injury history, if we need to see that.
Yeah, so I don't know if you saw the tweet from American Alpha to him. Did you get
a chance to
see that? Okay.
No.
Essentially, I think it was Jason Jordan said, "See you in Orlando," mm-hmm. with a smiley face.
Ah.
So I don't. You know, there may be smoke to that fire, but mm-hmm. Who knows? I heard like maybe them plus Angle versus the Wyatts. I know that was something I heard, and I think that would be cool. I mean, I think Angle, you know, if he's in condition to kind of hide out in a six-man tag and come in and do his big spots, because I guess that's where I'm at with Angle now. I saw his Zack Sabre Jr. match last year, and the crowd was molten for Angle right when he came out. So that was a great moment, but you could really tell. I mean, they did like an 8-minute match that was very rudimentary, just because that's what Angle's, I guess, physical level is at now. And it's really difficult for him. It's kind of like when Bret Hart, you know, his match with Vince, it's not as severe as that, but with both Bret Hart and Angle, you associate them with a very physical style in the ring, executing suplexes and high impact moves. And so if Angle's not able to do that, it kind of makes himself look like a shell of himself. So maybe, you know, if he wants to do a 6-man, can hide out, come in for a couple big spots. I have no issue with that. And I think that'd be a cool way to kind of fill out the WrestleMania card.
Yeah. And in a way, you know, he would fit in with some of the grappling style that's more popular in say like an Evolve or with Zack Sabre Jr., you know, today. I mean, maybe he could come in and, you know, do some groundwork and then get a hot tag and throw some Olympic slams and some ankle locks around. I do think that would be a much better choice and use of him than, you know, say a one-on-one, you know, match with someone yeah. higher up on the card.
Yeah. Like yeah. him versus Sami Zayn or something. I just don't think would work out too well.
Yeah. And you already have, you know, you already have the Undertaker in there, and that's always a concern of his physical uh-huh. well-being. Goldberg, at least, is, you know, probably more jacked than half the roster at this point.
Yeah. and kind of, I do think too, you know what you're getting with a Goldberg match. So again, I mean, you want to remember these guys for what they were at their best, and you at least want to see glimpses, like even, you know, broken down Hulk Hogan in 2002 at WrestleMania 18. He was able to give you the leg drop, you know, the big boot cuff to the fans and all that. So if Angle's out there, you at least want him to, you know, throw an Olympic slam, do some ankle locks, maybe some grappling, like you said. But yeah, in a long match, it can be kind of hairy, and it kind of starts looking like Willie Mays in a New York Mets uniform out there, you know.
Good reference. I was going to stick to wrestling and say like Dynamite Kid in a Michinoku Pro,
yep,
where you just felt sad.
Yep.
Well, any of the other names that have been ballied about that give you any interest? Hall of Fame is, I don't know, not one of my favorite topics to talk about. I'd much rather talk about the baseball Hall of Fame names that dropped today. But any other names that you're looking at to think, hey, you know, it's about time, or what is this person doing in there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Rick Rude, that's a cool, I think that's a smart move that's overdue, so that'll be good. I mean, to be honest, somebody like Beth Phoenix, that to me kind of feels like, yeah, I don't know, I mean, it's just, when you hear Hall, I mean, it is the WWE Hall of Fame, so whatever. But Beth Phoenix, Hall of Famer, I just don't get that vibe. Even she seemed like below somebody like a Melina, you know, when she was in the company. So that's a little, that doesn't exactly get my meter going. And then DDP seems like another solid choice to help fill out the class. So overall, I'd say they've done a good job so far, besides the Beth Phoenix misfire. And I know a lot of people are excited about Angle.
Right. And you know, at at some point, yeah, it's almost just putting in a female competitor for the sake of putting in a female competitor. Right. I'd almost much rather, you know, if they're going to take one woman, hey, just and then there's Cyndi Lauper's just right there waiting.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, let me see who else. I don't even know who they could really rely on to go in besides, like, on the women's side that they're still on halfway friendly terms with. I mean, I would expect, I guess, Mickie James at some point, but probably down the line.
Yeah, exactly. At some point, the entire roster will be, you know, of Divas will be in if they keep going one at a time here. So in terms of the actual Royal Rumble, we're starting to, you know, coming up in a couple of weeks, we're starting to actually get a card fleshed out. Doesn't seem like there's going to be many matches announced at the last second, which I'm a big fan of. It's good to get excited about a full card going in instead of having some thrown together matches on SmackDown 3 days before the show. What I like about this show so far is that there are a wide variety of possibilities. Usually there's one or two names that, okay, you know, these are going to be the guys who are going to be in there at the end. But this year, well, I'm certain by the time, you know, the title matches are over, you're going to have a good idea of who's winning. There at least seems to be more possibilities for a victor.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think if you just look at the Rumble match itself, there's a few avenues that you can get there. Even with somebody like Brock Lesnar or Goldberg winning, I mean, I don't think it's any big secret they'll probably be matching up in a singles match at WrestleMania again. But, you know, hypothetically, if they really want to make that into a blood feud, I could see one or the other winning the Royal Rumble and then giving that up, you know, especially in Brock's on Brock's behalf. You know, he wins the Royal Rumble and decides, I want to give that up to get a piece of revenge at Goldberg to kind of beef up that match. So there are even possibilities, even though it seems like they have a locked-in singles match looming at WrestleMania. But beyond that, a ton of avenues. I guess if you had to put money on one person right now, who would you go with?
I would go, what I like about this is I'm already faltering when I say it. My initial thought going in was The Undertaker. Yep. And he seems to be front and center on every single advertisement as I've been looking through, setting up, you know, research for the show tonight. So I don't know if that's just going to, you know, that's a little tease or that's a, you know, that's going to be where they go with. It's just not necessarily something I want to see, but that Undertaker Cena match has been just been waiting to happen.
Yeah, I guess we'll see, because as of a week ago, I certainly would have picked The Undertaker. And then, you know, take it with a grain of salt or whatever, but now Meltzer has reported that Cena Undertaker is not the match, that they're going in a different direction, but he won't reveal how because he promised his source or whatever. It's very convoluted. But he said it's not, you know, The Undertaker. So I don't know. I think it'll be, to me, very interesting if both Kevin Owens retains, which I think is going to happen, and also if AJ Styles retains.
Yeah,
which I'm less certain about.
And that's not generally the norm. It seems that in recent memory, you know, Royal Rumble and back when Elimination Chamber was held in February, it's going to be again, but, you know, one, it's going to be brand specific as opposed to overarching. It seemed like that was the time to reset every single storyline. So you might see, you know, a new champion at Royal Rumble and then another new champion at Elimination Chamber. I don't know if you're going to have two title changes and a new Royal Rumble competitor in one night. It is a little bit more open. I would like to see AJ Styles in the title match. I think he deserves it at this point. In my opinion, and I know people would argue me with this who really love SmackDown, but almost a one-man show on SmackDown. He's definitely number one, and everyone else is a step below him. outside of Cena, who is, you know, just making occasional appearances.
Yeah, well, we know you hate The Miz, Steve, but I would just say, yeah, if you are a Miz defender, I would have him hovering around that level.
I watched SmackDown last night and watched it in its entirety, and I made a list of all the people that they were saying on SmackDown, and every single one of them got booed except for AJ.
They're kind of the polar. It's weird that him and Roman Reigns are kind of the inverse of each other. Where Roman Reigns, they want to be a big face, and all he does is get booed. AJ, you know, they try to make him a big heel, and all he does is get cheered. It's a kind of weird dynamic they have going right there. I'm going to propose an impromptu game, Steve.
Okay.
So I'm looking at who is declared for the Royal Rumble right now, the match.
Okay.
So why don't we just run through the names quickly and on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being, you know, everybody has to die inside the ring and then they'll win, and 5 being, you know, they're going to WrestleMania. We'll give quick odds on everybody announced so far. So first one is Luke Harper.
Before I give a number, I do have to say I've been pleased with the way he's been placed more front and center in terms of the Wyatts. And, you know, there is some definite dissension between Orton and Bray and Luke, where it looked, you know, Luke walked out and looked like he might be going on his own. And I'm a huge proponent of giving him an opportunity. The chance of him doing anything, you know, 2, 1.5.
I was going to go 2 and be nice at that.
Yeah.
Randy Orton is the next.
He is, I'd say, like a 2.5 or a 3. It looks, you know, because he's Orton. He's still Orton, but out of anybody on SmackDown, you know, he might be one of the, you know, a dark horse type candidate. I don't think they're going to. Well, we'll get to him in a second.
Yeah, and Bray Wyatt, I guess we can kind of lump him in, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're, yeah, I'd agree. Pretty unlikely. Sheamus and Cesaro, let's get them quickly.
Get a one for both of them.
Yeah.
And it's not for any of their fault of, I think that they've been pretty entertaining, and they've lasted quite long in terms of tag team partners who don't like each other, that old trope. But I think they've done a good job of stretching that out over an extended period of time, which is rare in these days. But for them to have any sort of, you know, victory at WrestleMania, or, you know, if they're one of them is in the final four, I'd be happy for them.
Right. Dolph Ziggler, new heel character.
Yeah, I'm super excited for the Jerry Lawler Dolph Ziggler interaction that we'll be seeing at the Royal Rumble. Yeah, maybe a 3. Let's be nice there.
Yep, I was gonna give him a 3. I could see him as like a dark horse, but it feels like they just kind of did that with the SummerSlam title shot that he got versus Ambrose. So yeah, not too optimistic with him. The Miz, your boy.
Is The Miz declared? Oh, yes, he is.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't stand him. And I do recognize that he has improved substantially. We'll go 3.5 for him.
That's exactly where I was going to go. I think there's an outside shot Miz wins.
Yeah.
I'd say he's probably top 6 or 7 for me, mm-hmm, of guys that could win. Dean Ambrose, I see him probably at Ziggler's level, maybe even a little bit below.
Yeah, I was going to say like 2.5.
Yeah, 2.5. Especially
since he has the title.
Right.
The
The Undertaker.
4.75. You know?
Yeah, I would say 4.5 for him. Good for sure. A heavy favorite. Still, I mean, I think with Undertaker, the thing about him is that he has so many options. I mean, you look at who's the champion. Like, do I think Undertaker and Kevin Owens are wrestling at WrestleMania? No. But is that possible? Yeah, kind of. And then on the SmackDown side, I mean, between Cena and AJ, I mean, there's tons of options there as well. And then with the Jericho Owens feud on the Raw side, they still have, what is it, Fastlane as the Raw pay-per-view or special yep. event before WrestleMania. So there's a ton of stuff that could happen there, and that's where Jericho turns on Owens with whoever he's facing, and you have a new champion and Undertaker's facing him. So just a ton of options for the Undertaker, and I can't think of one match besides versus Bray Wyatt or Randy Orton of somebody on the roster that it wouldn't feel fresh, or Brock Lesnar. Don't need to see that again. But besides those guys, I mean, everything else seems fresh for him.
And I think that's a rarity. You know, and that's a, you know, there are a lot of people who kind of shame the booking on Raw. But the one thing that I've been, not, I wouldn't say excited, but intrigued by is bringing Goldberg, bringing back The Undertaker, the elevation of Braun. They do exist the possibility of many unique matchups and new and fresh matchups, which is not something you can say much for the past.
Right. Seth Rollins, are you putting him kind of in the Ambrose category?
A little above Ambrose, probably about a three.
Three, okay. Baron Corbin.
An interesting one, right?
He's interesting to me.
I am going to go out on a limb and say he has the best chance of anyone on SmackDown to win this thing. I think it would be a shock. It would be something way different than they have used the Rumble for in the past to really put over someone that strong who's that young and raw. I'll say like 3.75.
Nice. Yeah. I'd be 3.5 for him. Braun Strowman, also kind of an interesting name.
Yeah. I see him getting doubled out by, you know, like a Goldberg and a Reigns. It's going to, you know, I'm sure Zayn's going to be in there, and that's going to be a lot of the storyline.
Yeah. They definitely teased him and Brock, on Monday. So I can see that being a possibility. Yeah, I mean, with Strowman, I'd probably see him more in, like, the Diesel 94 role instead of exactly. a winner. But, yeah, you know, he comes out, like, 6 or 7, clears through a bunch of guys, and then when the big boys come in, he goes away. But, I'd still put him probably at a 3.
Yeah, there feels like there's going to be some moment in this Rumble where you have Goldberg, Lesnar, Undertaker, and Braun all in there at the same time staring off with each other.
Reinforce the ring.
Yeah.
Chris Jericho.
I'd say very little chance. Let's go 2.
Okay. Are you ready for this? He's my yeah. pick to win.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know why. I think I'm going with him. It may change, but yeah, I have him winning. It just feels like to me, I think they really think they have something with the list. I think they definitely trust like Jericho in a title match to where it won't be embarrassing. But they also feel like with Goldberg and Brock and Undertaker and whoever he's facing. And I mean, if he's not facing Cena, you know, Cena's going to have a big match on Mania. And, you know, Triple H and Seth Rollins are facing each other at Mania, and that's going to get mm-hmm. time. So I just think they can think, you know, they can put Jericho in that title match and stay the course, and it may be 6 from the top, but that's an option they can go with. The New Day, we can lump all 3 of them together. I'll just say Kofi and Xavier are probably 0 or negative or as low as you can go. Big E right behind them, but probably a 1 also with Cesaro and Sheamus.
Yeah, and do you think anyone sees something in Big E at this point as a singles competitor?
Eventually, but
because when you know when he was down in NXT and he came up, like there seemed to be a buzz about him. And you would see him on Twitter and like, whoa, this guy's got, you know, he's humorous and kind of stood out with his stuff with AJ, Lee, not Styles. And
I'd say we're a year away, and then we'll really see kind of where they see him long term. And then Brock and Goldberg, we kind of talked about them. I'd say they have a good chance, maybe a four. You know,
yeah,
they're in conversation. So yeah, that's a pretty again, just going through the names. That's a beefy lineup there.
And there's some, you know, names that I'm assuming are going to be coming along, like, you know, your Kane and your Sami Zayn and.
Oh yeah, Sami Zayn for sure, and he's somebody I'd with Jericho, I had him as my winner, but Sami Zayn to me is honestly right behind him. And I could see him, you know, if AJ retains, I could see Sammy flipping over and facing AJ if they want to do, like, the work rate heavy match, which, again, was rumored by them watching Omega and Okada or whatever. So actually, a lot of options.
Chad, I'm updating your resume, and I'm going to be sending it into WWE because you're, like, you're booking my WrestleMania right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would go for AJ versus Sami Zayn. I'd have no problem with that.
I'd back up a truck of money for that. and it feels like Lawler after last night's going to be in as well. I don't know if this has been formally announced, but I, you know, read the rumblings that he's going to be broadcasting, and that's been a trope of theirs as well to have Lawler hop in, and he had a big confrontation with Ziggler last night, which ended up with JBL trying to come and rescue him, but tripping over wires as he came into the ring, which was quite humorous. If you haven't seen it, I'd go back.
Yeah, I gotta go back and watch that. So what about, like, Finn Balor? I know that's a popular name too. Or anybody else? I'll throw in Finn Balor and Samoa Joe. Like, he's primed to.
Yeah, I mean, you can only exchange. You can only be in so many main events on takeovers. You can only flip the belt with Nakamura so many times. I can see Joe. If we're doing the 1 to 5, I can see him as like a 3.5 in terms of getting into the Rumble. I don't know. Finn was your, and this could be a podcast in itself. What would be the booking if Finn did not get injured? I don't see him coming back if he's going to get thrown out.
Right.
And, you know, as he was the choice to be the first champion. So I could see him coming out, as setting something up for Fastlane. He's, mm-hmm. you know, it sure. feels like he's going to be at Mania. And then that throws a whole bunch of and he's a guy who can go, if you want to be, creative, you know, and you worried about lack of depth on SmackDown, you can just throw him to SmackDown and say, hey, you know, didn't take care of him during his injury or anything like that. And so they signed him over to SmackDown.
Yeah. One more name I want to mention to see if you think he'll be in the Rumble match.
If you say Kenny Omega, I'm hanging up on you.
No, Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega. Cassius Ohno.
Oh, yeah. I don't think so. Even with his history with the company, that doesn't seem like WWE move. If they were that unhappy with his attitude originally, just to throw him on the main roster and that, unless he just shows up and then goes right back down to NXT. I just don't see that happening. I don't think he has the name of someone like, even close to a name as someone like AJ debuting, which was, you know, a pretty big shock at the time.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I don't think he has that cash. I mean, honestly, all jokes aside, if Kenny Omega debuted, I think that would be the only name that would kind of mimic what we might have seen with what we saw with AJ last year. I think that's the only way they could sort of duplicate that of anybody out there. Besides, you know, your straight legends that are never going to win. I mean, I'm sure if Angle comes out in the Rumble, he's going to get a big pop, but he's not winning the match.
Oh, R-Truth looks like he's going to be in too. At least he's in the poster.
Oh, there we go. probably ahead of AJ. If you've seen that poster, like AJ's hiding in the back there. It's so sad. a lot of Twitter angst when that one was released, and he was right next to
Sasha, who's not even going
to
be in it.
Next to
one.
Kofi, yeah. Hanging out with Kofi and Sasha Banks, who are not on the card. Yeah,
Swan and Dolph and Kalisto back in the corner there.
Letting all the big boys up front.
Any thoughts on other matches? Oh, you know, we talked about AJ, we talked about Owens, those matches, but you know, we also had the women's car match announced. We had the cruiserweight match announced. Bayley Charlotte. You know, are you a believer? That's the only reason I wanted to do the podcast tonight was to say that.
Yeah. Well, congrats. You you nailed it. You know, a lot of people thought this was going to be the Mania match. And I never really bought that just because of the way they were portraying Bayley. I mean, ever since she's gotten the call up, Charlotte has this pay-per-view streak going. I do think they've got some kind of special and important with that. And I do think they need to save it for a big moment. And quite frankly, I don't think Bayley is the person to break it at this point.
No.
So I'd say Charlotte wins here. Now where that takes Charlotte at WrestleMania, who knows? I kind of never thought this would be a WrestleMania match, and, you know, I'm excited to see it. I think it'll be a good match, but I'd expect Charlotte to win. On the cruiserweight side, I really hope Neville wins, because he is someone that I have not cared about really that much at all throughout his career, even as Brock. Right. And his character work has been amazing since he's came back as a heel.
And I'm glad you said that, too, because he was never someone who was known as, you know, back when he was Pac as well. He was just, you know, he was that flippy guy. You know, almost the reason the definition of that came up is that there was, you know, an incredible athlete, but not much to him in terms of character. And really, you know, hearing him in interviews and stuff, not much confidence in himself either. So to see that come off, and I don't know what he did when he was off TV for so long to get himself ready for this. But kudos to him for putting in the effort.
For sure. I mean, I think it's totally revitalized him. I really hope he wins the belt. And I think he could take it somewhere, you know. It felt 205's been a little slow getting out of the gate. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like with Neville and even Swan's been fine. I know that's Nate's favorite.
That's an outlandish statement.
Yeah, the outlandish Rich Swan. Nate loves that. But even him as a champion, he's added some flavor, shall we say, to the proceedings. And you know, they're still holding off on Tozawa and
there's a lot
Metallic
there.
So they got people waiting in the wings.
And Metallic and Tozawa, you know, people who do have a lot of charisma, natural charisma, and there's always, you know, random guys hanging around NXT that they can bring around for that too. And we're going to be talking with our boy Hugh Little a little bit later in the show about 205 Live, so we won't get too much into it right now. And we're also, going to wrap this up, I think, because now that you talk about 205 Live, there's also a little something else with WWE that we need to get to, and that's the UK tournament. And so, an interview reminiscent of Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon back in 1993 when they had that great sit down. We got
92. The last of Hulkamania.
Yeah, and you got the Hulk Hogan pictures in the background, and we got a pre-recorded interview with Justin Rosero, pre-bubonic plague, and a chap named Alan, making his debut on Clotheslines and Headlines. So, first, Chad, of course, thank you so much for joining us on short notice. You are a stalwart of Place to Be Nation, of course, and we can turn over the show to some of our other partners here as we come back from break on Clotheslines and Headlines, episode 16.
Down, I'ma turn it out, brush it out. I'm the one you're talking about.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Would you think if I sang out of tune, would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help.
All right, Nation, we are back here on this episode of PTBN Clotheslines and Headlines. Talked a little WWE so far, dove into our Royal Rumble preview. We're going to go ahead and bring in a new special guest here for the world of Clotheslines and Headlines. Has never been on the show, but you do know him if you are a PlaceToBeNation.com visitor or podcast listener. He, of course, co-hosted the great Letters from Kayfabe along with our buddy Parv, and that is my friend and yours, a chap called Alan. Alan, how are you, sir?
I am absolutely phenomenal today, seeing 2 days of fantastic wrestling live. I'm totally exhausted from it all, but I'm excited to discuss it with you.
That's good. And, of course, I am the true co-host of Letters from Kayfabe. Alan just pitches. If you haven't listened to it, check it out. We talk a lot about it. And, of course, we are airing this on Wednesday night, so you will be dropping the newest episode in just a few hours, I would think, right? Usually right around midnight Thursday morning it goes out.
It goes out on a Thursday for everyone. So yeah, we discuss WWF, the edge of the WWF cheese platter, so to speak. So we cover discussion points from 83 up to about 97, and it's not your kind of standard discussion points. For example, on the last episode we were discussing Lance Cassidy, who had a 3-month run in the WWF, one of the Armstrongs, so it's kind of things that people don't normally touch on before, and we give little nuggets of information as well you may not realize or have been reported on majorly before. So yeah, check us out. We drop every Thursday on the Pro Wrestling Only side of the feed,
and then you get corrected on certain message boards after.
Yeah, well, you know, that happens as well, but yeah, check us out, guys.
Yeah, and I actually saw Lance Cassidy live at a house show in Providence. It was a forgettable
match. You got there in that short run.
Forgettable match. All right, so we are here to talk about the United Kingdom Championship Tournament that WWE put on over this past weekend in Blackpool, your hometown, Alan. So you did make the trek over. You and your buddy Keith, of course, a big fan of the Place of the Nation podcast family and network. And it was quite the show. It was well regarded. It was well reviewed. I haven't seen too many negative takes on it. I saw more people saying this is what like World of Sport should have been. I've seen that float around quite a few places. And of course, Nigel McGuinness made his WWE debut after a long time, a long wait. He was in the color commentator role alongside Michael Cole. They did a really good job. The presentation was really strong. So, Alan, why don't we start at the top? When you first heard about this, were you in immediately? And then kind of take us to how you got to the point of going and talk about the experience of being here live in your hometown for a major show like this.
Okay, well, it was announced on December the 15th. There was a press conference from the O2 Arena in London. There wasn't much rumor about it before it kind of came out of nowhere. It snuck up on everybody. So the first I think I heard of it was some rumblings, you know, on the old rumor mill with people that I know a day or so before. But they had the actual press conference on the 15th. You had Triple H there. You had Michael Cole there. You had Finn Balor there. And it was to announce that they were going to run a UK show. And the UK show was virtually a month later. So the UK show, obviously, yesterday, the 15th, and the day before, the 14th. So they made the announcement, and they put tickets on sale pretty much straight away. So there was a lot of scrambling going around. Who's going to the show? Who's going to be on the show? It was all kind of a quite exciting time. So, of course, I was straight on the bandwagon, being the show being from Blackpool, being from the Empress Ballroom, which is a fantastic venue. I mean, for yourself, what did your kind of take of the venue? Would you feel it was different from the kind of standard presentation you'd see on main roster stuff?
Oh yeah, it looked phenomenal. And it's funny because at first glance it reminded me a little bit of like the Manhattan Center, because it's got the balconies and it's kind of a smaller, or a Hammerstein, you know, it's kind of just a smaller feel. But it's so much more grand looking with that large ceiling and the chandeliers, and it's I feel like it's something Doty's never really done. I mean, it was really unique, and it's so bright and lit up, but it's got this gold tinge to it. You know what I mean? So it feels very, you know, no pun intended, regal. You know, there's like a unique feel about it. I like the short aisle. It's just everything felt very special. And this was something, you know, Scott and I have talked about, and many others, dating back to Chris and Will and those guys on the old Doty Network special, like how can they make the network better? This is the kind of thing we had always talked about them doing, was a unique setting, roll the dice, you know, Bash at the Beach on the beach, you know, stuff like that, that they weren't maybe willing to do with major pay-per-views or, you know, TV shows. But now that you have your own network, you can go out and take risks on stuff like this, and it's paid off so far for them.
Yeah, no, definitely it's paid off. I mean, the presentation of this was really good. It came across. I mean, I've seen the first show on the network. I've watched that. I've not had a chance to watch the second show yet, but that'll be something I'll be going to watch later on after we've recorded this. But yeah, they ran the venue before NXT did a house show when they did the UK shows about a year or so ago. I think it was December 14, 2014. And so William Regal was there for that, so they got a good idea that the audience was there, that it was a nice size for a venue. Obviously, the venue played ball to their liking, so I think because of that, it was a logical choice to run, you know, the first kind of UK show from Blackpool, especially with William Regal being heavily involved and him always touting himself as kind of from Blackpool and the history of Blackpool wrestling and doing the stuff at the Pleasure Beach, which is the theme park, and William Regal touched on that in the past on discussions and podcasts he's done. So I think it all kind of fit well and work well, and I think the venue itself, like you said, looks different. There was people saying the closest that we've actually seen in modern times to something like this was NXT ran a show that was aired on TV. They did a show from LA, and I think the venue had kind of some fancy pillars at the back of the room,
right,
and things like that. It looks slightly different, but I don't think it was as grand looking as this, far from it. And this was, as you said, was far more well lit. So for me, that was different. So that was brilliant. From a live perspective, it's a great venue. It's small enough. I think there was, I would say, they said they were going to sell 3,000 tickets. I wouldn't say there was 3,000 there. I would say about 2,500 people there. But it was a sellout. There was no seats. On the second show, I didn't actually have a seat. We were on the balcony, so they moved us. We ended up on the floor. So we're the fifth row back, where the seats were more expensive than the balcony seats we had anyway. And we were totally loud and raucous, and it, you know, made to be, for me, from a live perspective, a better experience. So yeah, thumbs up for the venue. And yeah, so we had lots of different guys on the show. There'd be a lot of guys you may not have heard of. Anyone for you that you thought you had to Google, who is this person or who is that person?
So I purposely went in cold. I was going to look into it when I heard the names announced and heard talk, you know, either through Twitter or other podcasts about them. And I really made it a goal to go in with a completely clean slate, because I'd never really seen any of these guys. So I wanted to go in and be like, I'm going to form my own opinions. I don't want to know who so-and-so thought is great. You know, I just kind of want to go in on my own. And I'll tell you, I mean, most of the guys that I was supposed to be impressed by, like you, that they were working to push, or they kind of presented as, you know, the guys in the key roles, I bought into. Like, I thought Trent Seven, I had heard his name before and heard that he was well-regarded. I thought he came off really well. Wolfgang, to me, is a guy that I had never heard of, and I'm not sure how many people had, but he really made a name for himself. I mean, they gave him a push. They put him into the semis, and he really worked his ass off, and he's a guy that got himself over. And then I think the three big ones, Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate, and Mark Andrews, are the guys they really wanted to present as, I think, the cream of this tournament, and they came across that way. I think all three guys came off as stars throughout the run.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think the main guys that people were touting going in were, like you mentioned, Trent Seven, Tyler Bate, and Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews was a bit of a late addition.
So yes, they announced, very late, yeah.
They announced some alternates as well, but they didn't kind of emphasize that they were alternates at the time. But they brought in Mark Andrews after the event, and also Danny Burch, who'd had a run previously for a number of years in NXT. Didn't do too much, but always been a great worker in the UK. He used to work as Martin Stone for years and years on the UK scene. So they brought those guys to kind of make the field pan out a bit more, because there were some guys you'd not heard of. I mean, even on this show, there's some guys that didn't have Wikipedia you know, entries. So if you're not to have a Wikipedia entry, you're kind of under the radar. But hopefully from this show, everyone's got a bit more notoriety, even the guys that went out on the first show. So we just quickly go through the first show. The matches were Trent Seven defeated H.C. Dyer. H.C. Dyer's a young guy. I think he came across well. He didn't look out of place for someone I've not seen really before either. So he was new to me. So not just for me, not I'm from the UK, obviously. I do follow the UK scene. But there's so many promotions running in the UK. It's not possible for me to have seen everyone or even heard of most of these guys, you know, some of these guys. So HC Dyer was a guy that I hadn't heard of, but he, you know, came across really well against Trent Seven. Good opener. Obviously, there's a bit of pressure in an opener, so you're going to make sure you put a guy in that can work with another guy. So
especially a fresh concept like this, like real lot of pressure. I mean, who knows if this thing's going to bomb, if it's going to go well. I mean, for a guy like Trent Seven's never really been in this position to be on a show like this, you know, with this kind of presentation and pressure. It's like amped up even more than just a normal opening match.
Yeah, I think on this show, on the whole, though, I think a lot of the guys look nervous. And the other thing you've got to remember is, in the UK, we do not historically have 20x20 rings.
Right.
So WWE, you know, forever have had a 20x20 ring. WCW used to have an 18x18 or 16x16 rings. And UK go down as small as, you know, 10x10, 12x12.
And you could see that in some of the video packages they did, because I noticed that. And they showed a lot of nice clips of these guys to get you to know them, and you could see the smaller rings in a lot of those clips.
Yeah, so it's for these guys as well, you know, you've got to make some adjustments. Running the ropes is something different, so they didn't come across like they struggled at all, far from it, but I do think they were conscious maybe a bit more of it in this show. They were nervous for the fact that this was a big deal to all these guys. This was a massive deal, and I think, you know, obviously with Triple H being there as well, I think there would have been a lot of nerves. And as well, what came across is I don't think the guys were told to actually go out there and show everything on the first night.
Right.
I think that was mainly as well, I think, maybe because of injury. They were worried, obviously, that if people pushed themselves and went out giddy and, you know, did too much, that they may injure themselves, and, you know, that could affect the booking later on in the tournament. So the first match, as I said, was Trent Seven and HC Dyer. Then it was Jordan Devlin defeated Danny Burch. This was an interesting one. Just briefly touching on it, it was a bit of a screwy finish. I'm not going to blame the referee for this whatsoever, though. A lot of people who saw this match, the referee counted the three count. It came out of nowhere. It looked like Danny Burch kicked out on the three. But as you noticed, there was nasty cut from an Enziguri from Devlin just before that. So what I actually kind of guess here, and I'm going to actually find the answer out next week about what actually what actually happened. But he counted the ref, 1, 2, 3. Danny Burch kicked out at the same time. Everyone stood there looking like they didn't know what happened. I think the ref called an audible. Mm-hmm. I think the finish was going to come any minute, maybe the next spot or the spot after. He realised if he's not going to call do the count now, because they're that worried about blood in the WWE,
right,
he would have had to call a no contest. So I think for the sake of the booking of the show and getting a pin, I think that was a quick call by the referee, and ultimately I think that was the better call under the pressure, and hats off to him for that.
And beyond even the blood, a blow to the head like that, they're so concussion conscious now too with a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, he looked like he got whacked really hard, so maybe he was just like, all right, he's got a hole in the back of his head, and he got leveled in the back of his head. You know, he's not going to win anyway. Like you said, he's probably going to lose in the next moment or two, so let's just call it. I think you're right. I think it's easily explained away, especially when you have so much more to go over two nights.
Yeah, definitely. So moving on then. So Jordan Devlin, quickly, was a Finn Balor protege. He didn't come across well in the first, from a live experience, he did not come across well. He looked like the weakest guy on the show to me. His strikes were really weak. His chin locks and things like that he was doing didn't look tight at all. They looked loose as hell. I watched a Preston City Wrestling show the same day that was from Blackpool. They kind of piggybacked the hype of this, so they had a lot smaller show. And it was a trainee show, and some of the guys on there were working tighter, were looking, yeah, working more convincing than you know, Jordan Devlin. Fortunately, the crowd shit on him, you know, alluded to that, saying that he was very, you know, you're not Finn Balor of chance and things like that. I think he took it in his stride, to be fair. He didn't look out of place. I just think he was the weakest guy out the 16, you know, competitors in this first round. Mm-hmm. So the next match after that was Sam Gradwell defeated Saxon Huxley. And Saxon Huxley, this was the match which you will have heard the Jesus chants.
Yes.
So what did you make of those chants? There was some kind of people who were upset about them. And also, as a, you know, a bigger discussion point, the actual fans in general over the two nights.
I thought the Jesus chants were very accurate. I think he looks like Jesus. So, I mean, at least the depiction of Jesus. So, I mean, I think it's, I get it. Like, I had never seen the guy before, but I immediately grasped why they were chanting Jesus. I'm like, oh, yeah, kind of looks like Jesus. So that made sense to me. I thought the fans were great. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the atmosphere. I mean, you're having a tournament of UK-specific wrestlers. having a fan base of, you know, that knows them the best, and that's what you get with a lot of, you know, you can tell me more than I know, but my impression of UK fans is rowdy. They're into the match, they're into the show, they're very proud of their local wrestling scene. Lot of sing song like at soccer matches. So I thought it made sense. I mean, it felt like, to me, it's, I know a lot, there's a lot of criticisms, and rightfully so, around like a TNA and NXT audience. And I think the natural thing was to link these two because of the venue and the tournament and the size. But I don't think there's a lot of connection because this isn't a regular group of people who are at every week's show that do the same chants or the same. You know, it felt more organic than something like that. It didn't feel as orchestrated as some of those NXT shows where you know it's the same people saying the same shit every week. This felt like it grew out a lot more organically. And just following a lot of the, you know, British wrestling fans on Twitter, like I do, just through you and others, I know how strongly you guys feel about like this, how big of a show this was to have in this town at this time, in early 2017, when British wrestling's really has taken off over the last couple of years and become such a boom over there. I think it made a lot of sense that they were so into the show. It didn't, I mean, in no way did the fans detract anything from me.
No, I mean, for me, I made the comment last night when I got home that the fans or the atmosphere for me was very similar to a boxing match in the 90s, a UK kind of big time TV boxing match. So we had a good boxing scene with good guys in the 90s. Those guys like Nigel Benn and Chris Eubank, who were middleweights, world champions. So, but they were the two main guys in the division at the time, happened to both be British. So they had a rivalry, and the atmosphere that you'd see on those kind of shows was very, very similar to this. A lot of chanting, a lot of boisterous stuff. Yeah, don't get me wrong, you get that at soccer games, but you also get a lot of the sporting events in the UK. Yeah. Darts is big in the UK. It is kind of quite popular on Sky television, and there's a big rowdy atmosphere at darts where there's a lot of drinking going, a lot of chanting, the same at rugby matches as well. So it's not just soccer, but yeah, it was a whole, basically it was a hot crowd. Very, very hot. It was the hottest crowd I've ever been, you know, lucky enough to be at a show with, and I've probably been to easily over 100 shows in my time being a wrestling fan. So this was definitely the hottest crowd. And like you said, the negatives that people were saying about the we deserve it chants, they were totally organic. At the time, it wasn't a we deserve it, the people in Blackpool. It was more, I felt, a collective as the UK. Because there was a lot of Scottish fans there supporting Wolfgang.
I was actually going to ask you that, if it was a travel event for a lot of people. Like, you know, here... you know, obviously, like, big shows. I'm not trying to compare to, like, a WrestleMania era, but, you know, across the U.S., much larger landscape, but a lot of events will draw in if you have big names come in even for indie shows. So I was curious if this was a lot of travel from across the kingdom.
Yes, it was. There was a big Scottish contingent on the balconies with Wolfie signs, and we're going to party with Wolfie and all sorts of things like that. And yeah, there were some Welsh flags, some Irish flags, and it was a really good atmosphere. And a lot of the fans will travel from Scotland down to Blackpool, from where ICW is based in Glasgow. It's probably about a 3.5-hour drive. Mm-hmm. So it's not particularly far. From Wales to Blackpool, again, it's maybe, you know, an hour and a half to the north of Wales, 2 hours from there. And obviously we're in England. Ireland as well. You can easily get from Belfast to fly to Blackpool from Northern Ireland, and you can actually get a ferry over from Dublin, quite close to where Blackpool is in Liverpool. So there's people can travel. It was easy to get to the show. So I think Blackpool was a great middling area within the United Kingdom to run a show.
Right.
So yeah, there was a nice mix, and I think it was a collective thank you or we deserve it to everyone in the UK. I don't think it was exclusive to a smarky crowd. I didn't take it like that at all, because I'm quite negative when that thing happens itself, but this, I can assure the people that watch this on TV that this wasn't that.
It almost felt like you know, they're finally noticing, kind of thing. Like, this scene has been hot now for a while, and now WWE is really taking notice and giving us a stage. Like, that's what it felt like to me, just like this outpouring of emotion.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was really an emotional, especially the second night, really, really emotional. So, yeah, the crowd were fantastic. So just getting back quickly to the other first round results. We had Pete Dunne defeated Roy Johnson. Pete Dunne, a lot of people have heard of him. He's been highly touted. Yeah. He's worked bowler. He's a guy that changed his gimmick 2 or 3 years ago, to 18 months maybe ago, 2 years ago, to be the Bruiserweight.
Right.
He was a guy really just on the scene before. And, you know, you could see flashes of talent, but if he discovered himself and he found a gimmick that worked for him, and he's gone with it, because he's a mean looking guy. He's got some great facials. He looks like a mean, nasty bully. And that transitions to the style that he does. So he beat Roy Johnson. Roy Johnson's a guy that is fairly green. He's not been working very long. I think they missed a trick here with Roy Johnson. Roy Johnson's a guy who's very good at rapping and doing, and he's very charismatic. charismatic and you can give him a good promo. I really think before the match started, he should have got on the mic and done a babyface kind of rap or something.
I wonder if they almost didn't. I wonder if they almost didn't want him to like get over to that point. You know what I mean? Like maybe they wanted to him to. Maybe they're going to say. I mean, I looked at him and thought he had a really good look, a look that they like. And the fact that you're saying he's young and green makes me think he's someone they may. You know, I'm not sure what the contractual situation is with those guys, but he seems like someone they see as someone they could work with. And that's good if he's already got those promo rap skills. Cole kind of mentioned it on commentary a little bit. But yeah, they definitely didn't showcase it.
Yeah. The next one was then Wolfgang, who's ICW champion or was ICW champion. I'm not sure if he's now anymore because I don't follow ICW that closely. So he defeated Tyson T-Bone, who's someone I'm very familiar with, who's worked a lot for the local promotion for me, Preston City Wrestling. He's been their champion before as a babyface. He's been the tag champion with Rampage Jackson. Rampage Brown.
I didn't know he was working tag match.
Rampage Brown as team single. And they had a long, long run as PCW champions. Wrestled the Steiners and the Dudleys and teams like that when they were brought over. So he's someone I'm very familiar with, but what they did with Tyson T-Bone, which I found was very interesting. I think someone really watched the film Snatch, you know, the week before. That's the film with Brad Pitt in, where he plays the Irish traveler, speaking in a fast, quite hard to understand kind of accent. So Tyson T-Bone, he is legitimately a traveler to a point. He's never made any bones about that. He's stays in a static coma or traveling home. And I think he's just embraced his gimmick and turned it up to 11. I don't know if that's been a suggestion from William Regal, Robbie Brookside, Fit Finlay, whoever was involved with this, or this was something he came up with himself. But he definitely was a character driven. He was one of the more bigger kind of character guys on this show because he was given an interview before the actual show, before the match, to establish himself and what his motives were and things like that. He's a guy that you're going to see again if the UK kind of tapings take off. I mean, there's been no firm decisions yet or any that have been announced, but there's rumblings that they've signed 5 or 6 of these guys, similar deals to what other promotions have got. For example, you can work for Progress, you can work for OTT, you can work for ICW, so to speak, but you can't work for What Culture Pro Wrestling or this new 5-star promotion that have just announced the other day that they've got a deal with Spike in the UK to run shows. Mm-hmm. So I think there's been a few guys that they're tying down to commitments at least. And I think Tyson D-Bone, I've been told, is one of those guys. So it's not the last we're going to see of him. He's got a good look and Wolfgang did go over, and I think Wolfgang was the surprise of this whole tournament for me. I mean, you touched on that as well. Wolfgang's a guy I've heard of. I've never really paid much attention to him, but he was the third best guy overall, I think, potentially on both nights.
Yeah, no, I think so too. He really, and that's one that built up organically. Like, and they talk, Cole and Nigel talked about that before the second round matchup, how, or after he won, I think, the second round matchup, they talked about how the fans had really bought into him over the course of the two nights. And I think that's the cool thing about doing this over 2 days is you let everyone, and you were there, so you could tell me if this is accurate or not. You watch everyone the first night, and you're not just going right into the next match. You kind of get to go home, think about it overnight, have a few drinks, talk it out, read online, read on Twitter, and then you kind of build favorites going into day two. But I like how it's just 2 days compressed. It's not like spread out over a week. So it's you kind of get that good feeling of a compressed tournament, but you give a little room to breathe after you see everyone the first time.
Oh, completely. I think this is unique from the WWE standpoint. I mean, can you think of a time where they've done a 2-night tournament like this?
No, no. I was trying to think of that, and I don't think so. I know 1-night tournaments and then month-long tournaments. I can't really think of any that went. I mean, maybe like a match here or there, but never a full tournament across 2 days. No.
And I think this is the perfect amount of time for a tournament, and I hope that they may do this with other kind of ventures, this format. So I don't know how realistic they could do it for, say, the rumored women's kind of tournament that was you know, a takeoff of Cruiserweight, because I think a lot of that's got to be taped for obvious reasons, the experience levels. But I've just thought of another point that I did want to mention. I may as well mention it now, JT, is I'm poo-pooing this idea completely, if it's not already been poo-pooed, that you need to go through developmental to be ready for TV.
No, definitely not.
Was there anyone here that stood out that you thought they weren't hitting the cues, they looked lost completely, or do you think everyone seemed fine?
No, I think everyone looked fine. I do think there were levels of it, though. Like, a guy like Mandrews, who obviously had a lot of practice in TNA, I thought he looked more, a little more, I don't say prepared, but at the next level from some of the guys. I thought Pete Dunne did as well. So I think there were guys that, I don't think anyone out there looked not ready or like they couldn't hang. I do think there were guys that were like levels above other ones.
Okay, no, I agree with that. No, that's fair. Don't get me wrong. Go and have 2 weeks working developmental shows or TV taping or whatever, or dark matches, but, you know, film still so they can critique it. Just to say, look, we can do it and prove it to them. But this,
you don't need
this
a year.
This notion of having, you know, seasoning for an X amount of time is absolutely ridiculous. And that hopefully poo-poos that idea. But people like Mandrews were still getting direction from the referee. So
I take away
that I had, because I've not been to many live WWE, well, I've only ever been to one WWE proper show before, funnily enough. I've not ever been hugely motivated to go to UK shows. Like, the Raw tapings and the SmackDown tapings, I find the long, the drawn out. You're not going to get a certain match quality. If I'm not going to watch Raw and SmackDown regularly, the full 3-hour gamut or 2-hour gamut, then I'm not going to go and watch that same thing live.
Right.
Because the things I don't watch it for are going to be compounded live, the advert breaks, etc. So this was for me a new experience seeing WWE live and how they produce things. And what I never knew or noticed that much was after the show or after the match, the referee will go and hide, underneath the where the crowd is, the crowd barriers, just in front of the static cameras, so you can't see them. And they're giving directions, even to Mandrews, to tell him to wave, put his arms up, go up onto the turnbuckle, get down now.
Yeah,
and all this. So, I mean, even he was having that direction, I think. But then that might be they always have that direction, because the referees obviously got the earpieces and, you know, to relay the time cues. So I think that was interesting for me, that I'd never really picked up on that greatly.
I remember them doing it for guys. I mean, like Joe and Nakamura when I was in Brooklyn. Like, I remember seeing the referee. I know Joe was hurt. But even at a house show where I went in Rhode Island for NXT, I don't know if it's an NXT thing or a WWE thing, but it definitely is. It definitely is a focus. It is something they do. I thought Andrews looked more aware of where to be during his matches, I thought, more than most.
Well, he's had a good, year, 18 months on TNA TV, so I think we can give him that's the reason why. So, Wolfgang went over Tyson T-Bone there, and the next one was Joseph Connors defeated James Drake. James Drake, someone I'm quite familiar with. He worked before as a gimmick called the Blackpool Blondes. Mm-hmm. Blonde-haired guy. He's obviously gone a bit darker now. He's from the area. He worked a lot of the local shows, so I was familiar with him, but a lot of people weren't. He's worked briefly for Progress. So he was against Joseph Connors. It was an all right match. Joseph Connors, kind of, to be honest, bores me quite a lot. He's been pushed quite heavily in what culture. Joseph Connors got the win there. Semi-final match of the first night was Mark Andrews over Dan Maloney. Pay-by-numbers match did what it was supposed to do, to get Mark Andrews over. Not really much else to say, really, there. I think Dan Maloney was just there to put Mark Andrews over, which was fine. There's people have to be there to do that in a tournament setting. And then finally, we had Tyler Bate defeated Tucker. This was probably my match of the night on the first night. Tyler Bate, everyone knows now, 19-year-old prodigy. Been working for a number of years still. He's worked people young, very young. He was working Doug Williams when he was 16. Jeez. You know, so, you know, he's been around. He could work with some guys. But I still think for a 19-year-old to work the level that he did and the pressure he was under was absolutely phenomenal. Just to throw some stats at you, he wasn't the youngest guy ever to main event, quote unquote. I know it was a tournament, but main event a show, WWE show. That was actually the Tonga Kid. Main evented a show in 1984. I think it was February 84. He was 18 years and 6 months of age.
Oh, Marty Sleece sat up in attention. Let me ask you a quick question, because I'm curious about... I'm sorry, finish your point about Tyler, if you had one. I'm sorry. But I have a question about how the Knights worked.
Yeah, no, it was just quickly about Tyler Bate. I think he's still the youngest guy to hold a singles title in WWE. The second youngest was René Dupré. So I think for a guy of his age to actually get the ball and run with it was absolutely phenomenal. I think he's an absolutely great talent. I touted him at the end of October, November time last year. 2017 is going to be a big year for Tyler Bate. I didn't know, obviously, how big it was going to be based on this, but I knew it was going to be seen by more people and noticed. I'm really glad that it's happened within 15 days of, you know, the new year.
And it felt like they went with the format that they did in the Cruiserweight with the young face and the kind of the, not that Dunn's a veteran, but like the kind of the nastier, angrier veteran chasing coming out of the tournament. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like that a little bit more, where I think a lot of people thought Dunn was going to win the title, but it seems like they'd rather have him maybe chase a bit after Bate. So I think that'll obviously be where we go, kind of like they did with Kendrick and Perkins.
Yeah.
But my question had to do with the setup. So did you feel that, I guess my first question is, did most people seem to have tickets for both nights? Were they sold as one, or were they sold separately?
And then, they were sold separately.
Okay. So did you did it seem like it was the same crowd? I know it's hard with that many people, but did it feel pretty much like everyone was there for both nights?
No, funnily enough, not. I would probably say 70%, roughly, obviously can't give you a figure exactly, purely anecdotal, would be about 70% were there for both nights. There was a big progress show running on the afternoon, yesterday afternoon, which was in Birmingham. So a lot of people, you know, went to that show instead. To me, I thought personally that was a mistake for those fans. I know progress was a fantastic show by all accounts. There's a lot of progress fans, a lot of passionate progress fans, but it was a progress show where a lot of guys were not going to be on the show. They were going to be here, they're going to be elsewhere. They were going to be, Ring of Honor were running a taping, so no Marty Scurll, people like that. So I think it was just a standard progress numbers show. There was some surprises, one being Matt Riddle. At the end, he won the title, he won the Atlas title, but people didn't know that going in. I think this was a more seminal show. I think this is going to be a more memorable show looking back. You're not going to remember a certain progress show as fondly. Well, I don't think you will. People may disagree. That's fair enough. But I think 70% of people, as I said, we were there for both nights. But there's people that I was speaking to, we were only there for the last night. And I think, you know, I don't blame people for only going for the second night, because the first night, it was a paint-by-numbers show. There was no surprises.
That's what I was going to ask. That was actually where I was headed with the question was, did knowing you were there for both nights lead you to understand the, you know, better understand or have a better feeling coming out of night one? Because you kind of look at the matches and it's like, you know, there's nothing bad and they're all good. But like you said, nothing great, no big twists or turns or surprises. Obviously, no one really emptied the tank. They were all just kind of setting up the next round. So coming out of the show, if you had just seen night one as a standalone show, you probably think, okay, I saw a solid show. But obviously, if you know you're going to both nights, is that that kind of colors how you feel coming out of night one, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, I would have been quite disappointed if I only went to the night one. You know, the show itself, there was no match really that went over 3.5 stars, and I think that was because they were told to limit, you know, how much that they do. I think basically night two was the better night overall. Luckily I had nights for, you know, tickets for both. If I lived in didn't live in the area, I may have only got tickets to the second night myself, so I can understand why others did as well.
Yeah, I think if you're gonna pick one, night two makes more sense to me. You know, that's where everything's gonna go down. So let's look into round two, or into day two I should say. We don't have to go match by match per se here, but what do you think of the matches? Give me like your top three that really stood out to you, and maybe top three performances, top three matches, something like that.
Okay, top three matches would be Wolfgang. Number three would be Wolfgang and beating Trent Seven. Really good match. Really, it was the third match on the show. Both guys coming in as potentially someone that could advance. But I think it was a slight upset with Wolfgang going over. I think I had that match around 3.75 from memory. Number two would have been the semi-final between Pete Dunne and Mark Andrews. I thought that was an absolutely phenomenal match. I think, for me, I preferred that match than the match that they had at PWG last year. This match was shorter. They weren't doing over-the-top kicking out and stuff. This match I went 4.25 stars on. And for me, from a live perspective point of view, I've never gone higher in a show from a live perspective than a 4.25 match rating. So as well as this being an awesome show top to bottom, I saw in a 4.25 match here, and then the match which was my favourite, which was the main event, Tyler Bate beating Pete Dunne, I went 4.5 on that. So that was the best match I've ever seen live. And I've seen quite a few indie guys working great matches from Kevin Owens, Akira Tozawa, guys, high-end guys, you know, that can go. But these two matches were my favourite two matches I've ever seen live. So, yeah, Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne, which was the final match, I think, you know, it was the longest match over the two nights. It went around 15 minutes. It told a fantastic story. I think that was really good, the whole attacking of him early in the night. But the pop that Tyler Bate got when he did the deadlift, you know, getting Pete Dunne up with his injured arm was massive. I don't know how well it came across on TV, but from a live perspective, it was huge. And it was, you know, really then kick-started the final kind of 2 or 3, 4 minutes of the match. And just the whole two nights then just was total thumbs up for me. Just roughly, I'm going to do a quick conversion here just for money-wise. I'm just going to see how much the cost of the tickets were in dollars.
Okay.
Just to give, you know, the US listeners. So for two nights of wrestling of this standard, especially the second night, was $36.
Jeez. Combined?
Yes.
Wow. That is.
That was for balcony seats.
Yeah, I mean, that's a steal. I mean, that's probably about, I mean, I'm trying to think what I paid for the NXT, even like a house show, I think was probably around $30. So, yeah, I'd say you made out pretty well.
Yeah, it was definitely. My luck was in yesterday. So, yeah, overall, just tying up just some thoughts about it. It was fantastic the second night from top to bottom. Fantastically booked, fantastically paced both nights. Everyone hit the time cues. The matches flew for me.
Yeah.
Nothing for 1 second from a live perspective. I don't know from you.
No,
but for me,
yeah,
just flew.
Agreed.
So, yeah, I think, you know, really, really enjoyed both nights. I think for US fans, I hope they're exposed to new things. I think this is going to really help progress from a on-demand proposition, the same with OTT and ICW to an extent. But I think Progress have got the stronger shows overall with a bigger talent, you know, that people can check out. Between the three, they've got more kind of hot stars there, your Will Ospreys as well and people like that. So, yeah, I mean, people want to know more, you know, check out, support these promotions, show them that, you know, US fans do care about them, because that's what they want at the end of the day. The end goal is to get, you know, more recognition worldwide. And I think something like this is really going to, you know, put the UK scene more on the map than a World of Sport form a more international audience.
Was Bate the right choice?
Was what, sorry?
Was Bate the right choice to go over?
Yeah, for me, Bate was the right choice. I personally, going into it, I would have gone with Andrews only because it was more well-known, and I thought he could have transitioned into 205 quite quickly, taking the UK title with him until the UK tournament, the UK kind of thing was finalized or worked out what they could do. He could have done a little feud with Neville, but they went with Tyler Bate, which, you know, was the right decision at the end of the night. He was firmly the favorite. There was a story to be told with him and Pete Dunne. So to put the belt on Tyler Bate was a lot of trust in the 19-year-old, but it paid off. So hopefully this is going to lead to the WWE, Triple H, whomever, trusting younger guys to run with the ball. So we may see this in the US, you know, with NXT sooner rather than later.
So with, you know, without kind of naming the obvious ones, Zack Sabre or Ospreay, who else do you wish, kind of looking at this landscape, could have been included to really make this thing even better than it was? Or did you think they had the perfect field?
Looking back, there was a few guys I may have liked to see that weren't on anything. There's a guy that I really highly tout. So does a friend of mine, known to some listeners, he's a good pundit, is Dylan Hales. There's a guy called James Mason who works a very traditional UK style. So he's one of the camp guys that works, you know, the camp shows.
Yep.
You know, that do in the summer season, they'll go around, you know, full time. So they're working 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 shows a week. So the matinee shows and the evening shows as well. So these guys are getting a lot of ring time. And he's a guy that's done this for years and years. He's got his patter down perfectly. He can work face or heel brilliantly. He's just a great technical wrestler. Really good wrestler's wrestler. He's a guy people can check out on YouTube. There's full of matches of his. He's a guy that I would like to have seen on this that hasn't been given his dues that much. Another guy is Dean Allmark, who's a guy that's had a little run in Japan. He's been used a couple of times in Wrestle 1 in Japan. He works a lot of shows here in the UK. Again, another camp guy. And he would have got a light to have seen. So they were two guys that people may not have heard about at all that aren't either featured on World of Sport, aren't featured on this five-star thing. They're nowhere. So, you know, but from guys that, you know, were used elsewhere, personal favorite of mine, El Ligero, he works everywhere in the UK. He works more dates than anyone in the world. El Ligero. I said this, I've pushed this for a few years that he does this. Dave Meltzer said to me in the past, oh, there's Mexican guys that work, you know, 300 dates a year, 400 dates a year. So I said, Dave, give me the evidence.
Right.
Dave's never been able to do this. It's pure anecdotal. Yeah, there's guys, there's a lot of these unreported lucha shows that run everywhere, but I can't prove that that's the case. So one guy that's documented is El Ligero. He's working 200 plus dates a year. You know, he's working a hell of a lot of shows. He'll turn up in a show in front of 50 people. He'll do a show in front of 2,000 people. He'll work everywhere and, you know, I would love a guy like him, you know, to get his dues a little bit more. He's been on World of Sports. He's been watched, to be fair, by 1.25 million people the other week. So that's fair play to him. But I'd have liked to have seen him in a WWE kind of setting like this. But they're the kind of guys that I'd like to have seen. Is there anyone, just quickly before we finish the discussion, that you would have liked to have seen, apart from your obvious?
No, I'm, and that's merely speaking to just about as up on the scene as I figured you would be. So, I mean, I would say no, the big names that weren't there, and I understand why they weren't. And I wouldn't have necessarily done it if I were them either. And I'm kind of glad they didn't. Like, we saw Zack Sabre in the Cruiserweight, and that was awesome. I'm kind of fine with him and Ospreay not being involved in something like this. Like, it gave way to guys that aren't as heralded to a wider known audience, to people like me, to go out there and be showcased. Like, I learned a lot about these other guys, whereas I feel like the gravity of an Ospreay or of a Zack Sabre might have hung over the tournament a bit more, whereas this felt pretty much more wide open.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think now people realize that British wrestling doesn't start and end with Will Ospreay, right. Zack Sabre Jr. and Marty Scurll. You know, there's a massive, you know, amount of talent here. I would say the UK scene on a whole is stronger talent than the US scene at the moment, on the indie scene anyway. So hopefully more people can check out these guys and support, you know, UK wrestling. And, you know, it's been, you know, a really positive experience for the UK industry to have this, you know, on the WWE network.
What did you think of the usage of Neville and Tommy End during that kind of pre-finals match?
No, I think that was well worked. I mean, Neville was known that he was there. He did a meet and greet earlier in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So the people knew that he was potentially going to come out and do a segment or do something like that. And Tommy End was quite interesting. Some people were saying, why didn't he use his NXT name? It doesn't make sense. Look, at the end of the day, everyone who was there knows him as Tommy End.
They all would have been bitching if he didn't come out. So it was, oh, we all know Tommy End.
Well, you're just going to get the chance anyway. Tommy fucking End chance over and over. So let's just get him. He was booked to lose as well. Right, he lost as Tommy End. He's now in NXT. He's not Tommy End.
Right.
We can kind of...
And they'll say it. They'll say... And that's one thing with NXT. They switch the names, but a lot of times they'll kind of explain the switch, like they do with Asuka and a couple others, where he'll come in and they'll kind of, you know, he'll kind of explain maybe why they're changing from Tommy End. I would think they would anyway. It seems like they may.
Yeah, so I think that was a good match for the live crowd. They went about 9 minutes. They didn't do anything to overshadow the main event that was coming up next. I think it was a good placeholder on the card because obviously you always need the placeholders on a mm-hmm. tournament show. You can't go from the semi-final right to the final.
Right.
So I was thinking that they're just going to have the guys from the night before in a multi-tag match, which they could have done, would have been a bit lazy maybe to do that. But on the other hand, it would have given them more exposure as well. So there was pluses and minuses of this. But they decided to go with the star power and brought in a shock to bring Tommy End, who'd worked earlier in the day, he was on the Progress show because mm-hmm. the WWE didn't make good with Progress because obviously they booked Pete Dunne,
right.
who's majorly featured in stuff, Trent Seven, who's majorly featured in stuff, and Tyler Bate. So it was made good. They let Finn do some musical chair gimmick there, and also they did the thing with Tommy End be able to work it. So it was a nice surprise to see Tommy End work the Blackpool show as well.
That's cool. And of course, yes, Finn Balor did his little interview in between that match and the main event too. So that was a nice moment for everyone as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Alan, it was great to have you on here and making your maiden voyage on Clotheslines and Headlines. We'll have you back here when we can make the schedules and the timing work. It just so happened that this week worked out for us. So, of course, Letters from Kayfabe. Check it out each and every Thursday morning when you wake up for your morning commute. That's when I listen to it, for me anyway. The Thursday morning driving to work is the best of the week. So be sure to check that out. And it's been a big week here for the Letters from Kayfabe crew. Of course, we had Parv on the Place to Be podcast this past Monday night, and now you, Alan, here tonight. So.
Yes.
Can't go wrong with the big week for the lads over here with the UK tournament and you guys appearing on these shows. So, all right. Coming up in a moment here, we're going to be joined by Hugh Little. We're going to talk a little 205 Live. Alan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. You can crush us, you can bruise us, but you'll have to answer soon.
Explanations, JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySimulation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the PlaySimulation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
It's Cal McKen, and you are listening to another Ticket Exclusive.
Girl, I can't notice but to notice you, noticing me. From across the room, I can see it.
We are back, Clotheslines and Headlines, episode 16. I'm here with Chad Campbell, who has returned for segment number 3. Thanks to Justin for his little interview with Alan. And he is with us on the line, too. And we just don't want to get any of the listeners sick. So we put him off in his little corner of the room. But we are going to bring in, complete with a face mask to alleviate any possible germs, bring back for the second time my buddy, my brother in Cruiserweight action, Hugh Little. Hugh, welcome, man. Glad to have you back on.
Right on. Thanks, Steve. Man, I appreciate having me back on. It's been a minute. You guys have I know you guys have had a few shows. I think I was on episode number 1, I believe, right? I believe I was.
Well, at least it was rated number 1, if nothing else.
yeah. Right on. But no, it's cool. It's good to be back on Place to Be.
Yeah, and we just got back from our interview with Alan, who being over the pond, had lots to say about UK tournament. But I know that as we were setting up the interview, you wanted to talk a little bit about the UK tourney too. Give some quick thoughts before we get into our more detailed talk.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure the good lad Alan had a lot of really intelligent stuff to say on it, because he's a bright young lad. But I just really enjoyed this tournament, and I just kind of wanted just to say a few nice things about it. Just how overall, like, just how new and fresh it felt coming from a WWE branding, and just from having WWE put this production off of it just seemed like so fresh, and the crowd, the venue, everything just seemed so alive, and it was really a great way. It was very similar to the CWC tournament in some ways, as far as like there was this excitement that built. But one thing I felt that it was that was really different, it was just that live, and that like just doing it all in 2 days, as compared to when we were kind of going through the CWC, it kind of being like a show and really drawn out, and just kind of how different those two felt, and how much fun that UK tournament was. So I don't know. I just kind of wanted to give WWE props there, and also see them. One of the things that I always kind of talk about is, just giving some love and helping each other out, and especially when you see them promote companies like Progress, OTT, companies like that over there, and see a relationship kind of build and whatnot. It's kind of neat to see. I don't know. I just kind of wanted to say that real quick. Really great matches. I think I've talked to Celia and Les, and they both love Tyler Bate. Both love Trent Seven. So, and it was the first time I know all of us a lot. Well, I know them. They were kind of really getting to see some of these guys, not being exposed to it as much as, I had the Progress subscription and whatnot. So, I just wanted to give it love, and that's about it, brothers.
Yeah. I mean, I have not watched it yet, but I'm excited to watch it. I have,
you know, some people can, I'm no secret that I'm a fan of Chikara, and, you know, some people mock me for that, but, hey, you know, I've seen Tyler Bate wrestle a few times before in Chikara, and he's still currently a tag champ, so I'm kind of intrigued as to how that's going to play out, to be honest. But I've had a couple of good friends who have soured on WWE text me over the weekend saying, hey, you got to watch this. And I did have interest, but the amount of excitement that this brought is, you know, very similar to the CWC, so... Yeah. It's great to see. And, you know, and speaking of the cruiserweights, that's why we wanted to have you back. And we can bring Chad back on as well. The 205 live show. It's something that in Close Lines and Headlines, our boy Nate and I and you too, Hugh, have talked considerably about just kind of following the rise. And, you know, it was kind of when our show started was when the CWE was starting. So it's been a nice parallel to follow it. And, you know, we want to get your thoughts on it because you were on, you know, right away and we had a lot of hope. We, there was a lot of promise with the roster. There's been some thoughts that at the beginning that it's been stale. And then, a certain guy named Neville came in and, seemed to, lighten it up as we, Chad and I talked about earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think Neville, he did spike it up some, but yeah, I think all in all, you know, like you kind of said, when 205 Live first started, it was kind of the chance to see all the CWC guys be in a show and kind of be highlighted, and we weren't kind of sure what we were going to see, and you know, I personally wanted it to be a little bit different, you know, besides the fact that, you know, spotlighting this weight and size, this class, that is different. I get that. And I appreciate that being different for WWE, but I just thought like, man, can we approach this in some sort of kind of a new way? It would be interesting. And, you know, we give it some time, and it kind of, yeah, in the beginning, it was a little kind of what's going on. Some of the storylines were not, I don't know if they were there or they're kind of feeling themselves out. But, you know, as the show kind of progresses and at some point I got to the sense of like, wow, well, you know, we have this incredible roster. And I mean, if I just go down the list of this roster real quick, if I could pull like, you know, Rich Swann, Mustafa Ali, Tony Nese, Jack Gallagher, Noam Dar, Neville, TJP, Cedric Alexander, Brian Kendrick, Aria Davari, Tajiri, Sean Maluda, Lindsay Dorado, Drew Gulak, Tozawa. I mean, we're getting, that's a good roster of really like high wrestlers. And if you go down, like, have we had bad matches? We've had some. Have we had good matches? I feel like, yeah, we've had a lot of like pretty good matches, but I don't think there's been anything memorable. And that's like with a roster like this, you would just think that there would be a little bit more. I don't know. I just would want a little bit more from that. But as it's kind of going along, it's starting to feel like it's very much like Raw and very much like SmackDown. It's not feeling as fresh and as new to me, you know, in a weird way. I get it's WWE, and it just is, it's feeling very like this could just be on those two shows. And not, we could not even have 205 Live, and these guys right. could kind of fill out those two shows, and it just be perfectly fine. Because it kind of, there's nothing that kind of separates them as being necessarily different. And that's also kind of leading to a weird spot for me where it's just like, what are these guys all fighting for? You know, like there's just one belt, and week to week, it's like, it's getting harder to kind of like have that excitement for like, what are these matches meaning? What, like when the first match that comes out of the night, like what, I mean, it's kind of, I'm starting to kind of lose that sense of, of anything means anything. And I don't know. It's just kind of making it, it's just turning a lot of, I feel like, really good guys kind of average in some ways. And that's kind of, I mean, I hate to be a sourpuss on some of these, but you know, it's like this last show was perfectly fine. I loved, like, the matches were great. There weren't anything like over the top, you know? So I don't know. I think the adding the Neville is an interesting storyline, and I feel like it does add some like heat to the to this division. But it just seems like, you know, a lot of guys are just kind of just turning average, and I don't know. I just feel like maybe do something different. Maybe make this. I don't know. Maybe make wins and losses mean something. Have a ranking system. I don't know. I don't know. Do you guys have I don't know if you guys have kept up on it as intensely as I have, but I don't know. I don't know. Those are kind of initial thoughts.
I mean, for me, Hugh, I think the thing that the CWC was so great because stories were kind of organically formed throughout the tournament, where you know they were able to convey this redemption story for Brian Kendrick throughout the tournament and PJ Perkins. And then you also had, you know, after Cedric Alexander's match with Ibushi, Full Sail, you know, chanting, "Let's sign this guy," and all that. And so I think that's why when I first turned into 205 Live and saw, you know, Cedric Alexander's dating Alicia Fox, all of a sudden it just felt like they were trying to shoehorn certain storylines into the show. For me, I think it's kind of interesting what they're doing. I think they've kind of steadied the ship a little bit, and I think a lot of that has to do with Neville. And kind of his emergence is that is somebody that, you know, has taken a character change and a new persona and ran with it to me, which I appreciate because that's what I saw throughout the Cruiserweight Classic. Like, these hungry guys that hadn't been given an opportunity now are and are running with it. But the other stuff, it always seems like kind of the first match of the night feels kind of like a very kind of superstars, you know, or a main event-esque 6 to 7 minute warm-up popcorn match, which can be very frustrating when it's guys like Cedric Alexander and Drew Gulak and the like of them in that spot. So I do think a ranking system, like you talked about, kind of in the same vein of Evolve, what they used to do in the very early going, I think that would be a real intriguing way that, again, would organically create some storylines and some hate between the competitors, just from a competition standpoint.
See, when you said that people needed to have something to work for and some sort of prize, I thought the affections of Alicia Fox was exactly what you were getting at. I thought that was that the title was secondary to that.
Oh man, and that's not even getting into that situation, right? I mean, what a fumbling of. I mean, how does a storyline like that get okayed? I mean, I know how it does because I know Vince McMahon, his ways, but it's just sad that I just know that storyline is not okay. It's just so wrong in so many levels. It just is not needed. It's sad because I really like, I'm like, you know what, this is a new show, and I was like, I want to give it enough time to get its legs to get under, because this is a great roster. I love some of these guys, man. So you know what, I feel like they have done a few guys right. I just feel like, man, they could just do so much creativity, like just creatively. And I mean, why not? You have money, you have ideas. It's just try something new. Like, it just seems so crazy. And that's kind of talking like we're coming, like what we first started talking about, that UK tournament, it just felt like WWE had very kind of little kind of to do with it. It almost felt like at times that I didn't even think of WWE in some sense. So it was like, it was just this weird, like, wow, they just did the show really well and it was fun. And it was a little different from what they normally do. So just do something different here with 205. But you know what? Like you said, Neville coming into the scene, it's adding a little spark behind Rich Swann, I feel. So that's kind of neat to see some fury out of him. I do feel like they're doing Mustafa Ali, they're doing him better. I don't love that they do the stereotypes, like everyone's stereotype. Let's play off that. Like, that's again, like, yes, you could do that. Yes, I know. That is like, you could send a 4-year-old to think this up, you know? Like, Mustafa Ali, that's a scary name. But try a different way, try something else. And I feel like at least he's gaining some steam. But I mean, yeah, like Cedric, TJP, these guys are kind of just average again. It's just kind of, I don't know. It's just not, and I don't mean the average like in any ways, because like I said, when these guys go out and they put these matches on, these are really good matches, I feel, a lot of times, but there's no emotion. Like, I can't get attached to it necessarily. And
it's hard too, because you don't have the crowd necessarily behind it. Because they, as they go around the horn, to the different towns, they haven't, these guys aren't really established yet. You know, we've talked on the show before about, you have a small percentage of the, you know, the Raw watching population who watched the Cruiserweight Classic. And that could be an entirely different population that goes to, you know, the SmackDown events, which are going to be less expensive. It's going to be more kind of kit friendly for your Cenas and, you know, your AJs to an extent, but you're more established characters. So unless you let these guys go on, and that is the advantage that they have, that it's taping after the show, you don't have to worry about a crowd getting disappointed about what they might see on SmackDown with like a 20 minute a talking session that follows, you know, Graham Metalik, who, you know, we haven't really talked to him about, but, you know, some guy who's going to do crazy moves, he's not going to outshine what comes on next. You can go crazy after the show is over and not worry about, burning the crowd out.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chad.
I was just going to say, I think what he was talking about the match quality, that kind of, I guess, shows where we're at in 2017 and just kind of the consumption and the options that are out there. Because, yeah, I mean, you look at some of the matches that we've had, like Neville and Rich Swann a couple of weeks ago. I watched that match, and that was probably like a 3.5-star match, which, if you think about like 1991 WWF TV, that may have been the best match they had in 52 weeks of Superstars or Wrestling Challenge, just from a star rating perspective. But now with a lot of cool stuff, you know, all over the place, sometimes on YouTube or the streaming services or, you know, stuff like that. Like you, I know he had the Progress subscription. So, you know, for $7.50 a month, you can at least watch 1 to 2 kick-ass shows that they're producing every month and go through their history. So with the consumption, it's almost like you have to have more now than just a good match. And maybe that's just us being kind of brats as wrestling fans, but that's just kind of where we're at.
No, that is it. That is absolutely it, Chad. And that's something that I actually need to check myself on sometimes, is that, yeah, like I do. It's like, yes, you're in that kind of like, you can watch a match on YouTube, go somewhere else, watch one match here, one match here. And then by the end of the night, you've watched like seven amazing matches, and then you're expected to watch like a Raw or a show that's kind of like a 205, where yeah, they're putting on good matches, and like, man, it's smooth. These guys are professionals, so it is nice. But yeah, it's something about WWE, kind of, once they get their kind of hands on it and really massage it into what they kind of want, it loses a little freshness to it, or it has a tendency. They have the abilities to hit it here and there. So and that's another thing also I have to think about with checking myself is like, this is on the network. The network is built for like every age and every like kind of like just, you know, from a 8-year-old kid to like somebody that's 88, that there's something on that network for you. And so that's what I got to also remember, like 205, as much as like these are my guys and I feel like I want this show to be mine, you know, it's like you said, it's a lot of this a lot of the people on the network might not know these guys, and it's taking time to kind of introduce them and whatnot. And maybe that's kind of like, come on, can we get over that part? And, you know, but I don't know. They have their good moments. I do love that they're like the story vignettes and stuff. I can appreciate when the guys are kind of talking somewhat real. There's some kind of cool vibes there going on, but I'm still very hopeful about what's going on. And here, I mean, let's talk about how great Jack Gallagher is. And if it wasn't for him and his kind of antics and wrestling and the way he's gone about it, that show would be missing a whole lot. He's really helped carry that whole show.
It's incredible how fast he's come, where really no one had heard of him. And unless you're in England specifically watching, progress, there's very few people that are doing that. Mm-hmm. And to quickly go from, seeing him on the CWC, almost getting a chance in PWG and becoming so popular so quickly that he didn't even have a chance to do that. And then, coming up and showing up in front of a SmackDown crowd every single week in just a short few months. It's quite the meteoric rise.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even Celia and Les, like, they just gush over him and they love him, and they're kind of like very casual kind of indie, indie watchers and whatnot. The guy has really done it, and he's good in the ring. I mean, he's got some interesting moves. So I'm a sucker for styles and different looks and stuff. I'm definitely, I love that. Anytime I kind of get that is nice. But and in some aspects, I do miss when the little guy faces the big guy, So there is some of that missing with 205. I guess I never really touched on this, was that a lot of this is taking place on SmackDown and Raw. Right. I believe that's correct, right? Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so it's on those shows. So it's one of those things, it's weird for me. It's like they're trying to get me to watch Raw and SmackDown, being like, hey, yeah, 205 stuff is going on there. And it's just like, at this point, it's like, well, just put the whole show on there and maybe I'll watch, so I don't know. It's interesting what they're doing, and I think it's very much a test. Like, I could see other kind of wrestling shows popping up them trying and whatnot, but all in all, man, I mean, if I were to just kind of wrap up what I kind of feel about 205, I definitely feel like I'm still on board. I really, really want the creative to kind of step up and maybe change direction, give it a different feel, and love the roster. So, but there's still a sense of emotion that's kind of missing with the overall. You get a here and there emotions, but So it's still working its legs out. There's a lot to be desired, though.
Yeah, if I had one change that I could, well, two changes maybe that I can make is, one, have, you know, whatever higher up just take a step back and let them, you know, bring the guys who did the CWC around and let them take a shot at it. Yeah. And then I don't think, you know, they're not on SmackDown proper, but to take the 3-minute specials that are on Raw, you know, I think they had three of them this past Monday, if I'm not mistaken. And it's not doing anyone any favors. You're not getting a chance to get, a couple big moves in to pop the crowd and get them intrigued to say, whoa, I got to check this out. Unless you're an Alicia Fox mark, which I'm not sure if there are any, unless you enjoy pouring the Mountain Dew on people, then, it's just, they're not doing anybody any favors, throwing Kendrick and TJ Perkins in a 3-minute special.
Yeah. It's sad, man, because it's like you want to like these guys. Like I'm sure Fox and Dar and people are like nice people. And then you get just these crazy storylines that make you like, well, this isn't starting off well, you know, like just, it's just, I don't know. It's a bummer sometimes.
And my hope we'll do a quick wrap up here, but my hope is that it kind of ends up being like the ECW reboot where, like they just kind of let it go for a while and it ends up being a nice, little tight, 50-minute hour show where, it's just, a bunch of up and comers getting a shot to shine. You know, that's kind of the purpose is to let that happen and give different styles and, different looks of athletes a shot so you can have a wider range of an audience for the network.
Yeah.
I mean, I would just say quickly for me, like the CWC, I mean, that was appointment television. Like I would
have
the nerve to watch that when it dropped. And with 205 Live still currently, it's kind of like I look at my spreadsheet of stuff I want to watch in a week. And it's kind of once I get there. If I make it there, okay, I'll throw it on, but certainly not a priority.
Yeah, I would say I would agree with that. I'm going to, look really silly saying this, but I would sit in the parking lot waiting for my kids to come, and I would, like, watch a match of the CWC, wait for the school bell to ring because I was that excited and I didn't want to wait to watch it, where, like we alluded to before, there's just so much stuff out there to check out that even has similar styles as what they're trying to get at and does it so much better. What's the point at this point? Now I will definitely, I have no problem with hopping on board really quick, as it seems to be getting a little bit better here. Hugh, anything else that you wanted to bring up regarding 205 Live? Anything that you wanted to plug?
Oh, I just guess I would just kind of, wrap it up and, obviously check me, Les and Celia out, every week on Talking Sheet, the podcast that we kind of cover the coverage of wrestling. Mm-hmm. We have somewhat serious talks and then we have some silly times and I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting group of people. So Les is so
very special.
Yeah, he's so amazing. He really is. Like, he's just so amazing what he just kind of grasp onto, and he's just so just in tune to everything, and then he's just kind of grabbed Celia and myself and kind of just very casual when we first started and just took us on this ride of being in here. And the one thing that it's cool is, 2 years ago, I barely knew anything about, I just was kind of watching Raw and SmackDown and just being like, it kind of sucked as a fan. And I would just kind of once in a while talk to Les about it. And then everything changed where we just kind of started following once we did the podcast and I just changed as a person and what I liked and what have you. And the cool thing is this community that is, especially like, you know, everyone on the internet and just in wrestling in general, is that everyone just loves wrestling and they know so much about it, and they just, it's almost overwhelming to be around that many people with that much knowledge and passion. But if you just kind of be like, hey man, I'm learning, I don't know everything, I'm just, can you kind of help me? It's just, once they kind of figure that out with you, it's just, you can kind of find it, you can get there. And that's one cool thing about that community, about with me, I think with Celia probably feels it. So it's just been really cool. So, I appreciate it. And I give love every week to, wherever I can around the wrestling community. And, it's a great show. So check it out.
Yeah. And I want to just say that as well, you know, like, it's easy to get negative on the internet, but we have quite a large variety here at Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only to listen to, of all different kinds of expertise, and both in terms of depth and what different things that people like, which is, you know, why we have different guests on to bring up what they like, to be positive. And you don't have to be the negative person putting yourself over on Twitter about how much you know, because none of us know anything, and this is a really, really silly hobby that we all love.
Yeah,
we're hoping to win the Sheedy next year.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, Brad likes to joke that we lost to MLW, we tied for second as a network, but. Now they've lost Ric Flair. Now, you know, Bauer and Pollock are closing up shop. So we like to think everybody's like scared and running from us from the competition. So there you go.
You know what? I said that they, as soon as I heard Flair was off of MLW, I was like, oh, Brad is going to be so happy.
I like to think that, Flair saw he got the Sheedy, just gave a big woo, and then packed it in.
Yeah,
there's nothing left to do.
Yeah. Once he had that, it was over. Also, I mean, the material Les has had to work with between the Meltzer 6-star stuff, you know, really a couple of banner weeks for talking between all that.
Yeah.
I mean, so much material.
Yeah, it is funny. I know that recording tonight, there was a lot of controversy with
Brian Alvarez.
Alvarez, Triple H. So it's like, man, we're in 2007 and we've got Dave Meltzer 6-stars and Brian Alvarez Triple H interview. I'm like, Les is loving life. So, yeah.
What's the movie he was promoting? Surf's Up
Who even knows? It's so bad. That's good for Les. So he loves that kind of stuff, and you know, and that's a cool thing. He lives in that world. I don't live in that world, and I can, and I'm on Talking Sheet, and I just live in my world and talk about my things. So it's it's very interesting. So it's cool. And I believe that our show tonight, if I could give another plug, we will have an interview with Brandon Howard.
Nice.
So be looking for that. So that'll be another good one.
Yeah. At a decorative drop on Twitter. And he is one of the premier statisticians in the wrestling industry right now.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. So good stuff from him. So, well, but hey, thanks, guys.
We got to stop scratching, you know, each other's back. We got to scratch our own back here. So we're going to let you go, Hugh. Let's stop spreading the love too much. We got to do some nice self-love here, if you know what I'm saying. So Hugh, thanks very much for joining us. We will let you go. And before we head to break, we got to do some plugs of our own. We got 3 feeds, PTBN Wrestling, Pro Wrestling Only, PTBM Pop, and because I am a now newly proclaimed narcissist, I think I need to tell you what you should be listening to. Some things I am currently enjoying on Pro Wrestling Only, of course, Letters from Kayfabe, always a favorite, but Parv, you know, little podcast blast that he's been doing, and I really like his Top 10 series that he just started Most recent one, top 10 tag team specialists. It is 9-10 minutes. You all have 9-10 minutes in your life to listen to it. Well, very well produced, a lot of fun. Currently listening to my buddies, the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Greg Phillips, Nick Duke, doing their review of 2016. Listening to the comics, a great lineup of guests that they have, and I haven't yet been able to tell who is drunk and who is not drunk. So that's always a fun game when you're listening to the Hard Traveling Fanboys. Also, we got facebook.com/placetobenation, on Twitter @placetobenation. Of course, that's the number 2. And if you have some few shekels, I'm sure you got some Christmas money, some Hanukkah gelt, you can head on over to Amazon with our nice, easy link, placetobenation.com/Amazon. My son's birthday is coming up, so there's going to be plenty of Nerf guns and Legos bought there that will kick some money back to Brad, so he can try to, you know, maybe sign Pollock, sign Ric Flair over to one of our shows. And yeah, Chad, what do you got going on, my friend?
You did a good job, Steve. I'll just add two more quick plugs on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. We've added a couple of Japanese centric podcasts that I really enjoy. The Puro Pori podcast and also Strong Style History. And both of those are taking a historical look at Japanese wrestling, which I don't know any other podcasts out there that do that currently. So that's kind of a neat little wrinkle on the podcast scene. And then I'll give a call out. If you got an idea for an article series of anything of that, hit us up at info@placetobenation.com. I'd like to get some more kind of long form articles on the site or some think pieces. So yeah, if you got an idea, shoot it our way. We'll give it a look.
And I already have on my, I know you were one to make a list too, Chad. And, I've been making lists of stuff I want to see. And, with NJPW World, like there's, it's easy to catch up on the new stuff, but there's an extensive back catalog. And so one of my thoughts is to take this Strong Style History and kind of follow along. They just did the January 4th, 1992 show, the first Tokyo Dome, the first January 4th Tokyo Dome show.
Right.
And I've been enjoying doing that with Lucha Underground, where I watch the episodes and then go back and listen to the podcast to see what their thoughts are about it. Well, coming up, we're going to be joined by Nate Milton, who is a pro wrestling connoisseur. He is an amateur wrestling connoisseur. And if he were on 205 Live, he wouldn't be outlandish. He would be the man of 1,000 broadcasts. And he's going to be talking to Pete, Pete Schermacher, who was going to join us last week, had some technical difficulties. He is going to be joining us and also making a return. Yeah, it's like Clotheslines and Headlines reunion week. Brad Stott's going to be talking CWF Mid-Atlantic and Total Nonstop Deletion. And maybe a little Impact in North Carolina plugs, too. Could be. We'll be back. Close Lines and Headlines, episode 16. It's sweet.
PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Kuzumo Senpa, a Mandalorian. War's over, I'm a pizza Mandalorian. Historian, stomp star, was historian. Steven debate, but they play at Benegans. Rhyme renegade, show to penetrate. First and second defense, I won't hesitate. Got a job to do when Darth the guy that delegates. Got something against Skywalker, someone he really hates. I don't give a fuck, I'm after Solo. For all I carry, could be hiding at Yoda's dojo. Gotta make the money, credit's no good. When a job was run a shop in your neighborhood. Think you can cook, I got a grappling hook. Let's make this quick, cause I'm really booked. I'm a devious degenerate defender of the devil. Shows on all the trash compactors on the detention level. My backpack.
We are back on Clotheslines and Headlines. And yes, I did say we on our super sweet episode number 16. And much like that great man called Sting. The only thing for sure about this program is nothing is for sure, folks. Your ears do not deceive you. It is I, the Godfather, Nate Milton, hanging out here with the boys. And we have had a wild night so far. Talked about some great topics ranging in this sport of professional wrestling. And we're going to end things off tonight with a discussion about what might be one of the hottest promotions around. That, of course, is CWF Mid-Atlantic. And you know, I can't do this by myself. I need some tag team partners, as it were. So allow me to introduce to the program. You know him. You love him. He's a friend of the program, and he's from Titans of Wrestling. And this week in wrestling, Pete Schiermacher. Pete, how you doing, brother?
Doing good, man. How's everyone doing?
Doing all right, my friend. And it would be, you know, just me and Pete already. That's pretty good. It's pretty fantastic. But I'm going to out-fantastic by bringing on another voice to discuss all things CWF. And he's got the credentials, because not only is he the play-by-play man for CWF, but he is also one of my favorite authors. He's a scribe. You know him. Give it up one time for returning to our show, Brad Stutz from CWF Mid-Atlantic. Brother Stutz, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Hey, good to have you on, my friend. And let's get right to it, man. It's been a crazy week, like I said, but there is so much going on in the world of CWF Mid-Atlantic. And I think, Pete, you know, one of the places we can start is, you know, we are still pretty young in this new year. And one of the storylines that I already see taking place, man, is if you're a fan of pro wrestling, you no longer need to be serviced by one master. You no longer need to shop at a one-size-fits-all shop. You know, there are so many different organizations and promotions out there that are providing quality products out there, quality workers, quality storylines, and CWF is definitely among them. So let's get right into it, Pete. What's catching your fancy right now?
Well, right now is Battlecade's going on, and you guys, Brad, I've done just an incredible job and on building the stories, and that's what separates you guys really from being a regular indie. Because would you consider yourself more of like a territory?
Yes, absolutely. I always kind of compare us to, and you'll hear me say on commentary sometimes, you know, what if the classic Mid-Atlantic wrestling, what if Jim Crockett Promotions, what if that had survived into the 21st century? Ooh. What might it look like and sound like and feel like? And that's one of the reasons why we put Mid-Atlantic right in the name, is we wanted everybody to know this is who we are, this is where we come from, and this is, you know, what we're trying to be. You'll never catch entertainment in the CWF Mid-Atlantic name. Not there's anything wrong with that, but trying to present wrestling like a territory, trying to present episodic TV that, you know, quite frankly, I think has a lot of restraint compared to some places. To me, that's a big component of wrestling that's kind of been lost in the last decade or so, is you let things simmer to a boil. You don't just turn it on maximum heat on the first night. There's definitely that influence of territory wrestling and episodic TV week to week. That's definitely where I draw a lot of my inspiration from as a content creator, as it were.
Can you give us like kind of like a brief history of like CWF Mid-Atlantic and like the jobs that you have or hold right now?
Sure. We started December 30th, 2000. So the anniversary show this past year, and also this upcoming year, 2017, the anniversary show actually literally falling on December 30th is kind of cool. We started basically just real small operation. There were a handful of really talented local guys that just didn't have anywhere quality in central North Carolina to work without going a couple of hours west towards the mountains or a couple of hours east towards the beach. So they got together with some friends and started it up. I came in January of 2002, started as an announcer, transitioned over to being a heel manager and then a babyface manager. And once we kind of got back to doing episodic television and episodic type of shows, I kind of went back to my roots as an announcer, and quite frankly, I enjoy that as much as I've ever enjoyed anything. I don't miss being at ringside at all. I love the idea of, you know, being sort of like the crypt keeper, being the narrator who sets everything up and lets the things unfold, and if need be, can kind of string together, you know, from B to C to D as the story progresses. And through the years, we've had a lot of quality people pass through. Brad Attitude legitimately is the first graduate of the CWF Mid-Atlantic Dojo. He went on to Ascent and Developmental, where he was FCW Tag Team Champions with Dolph Ziggler. Chrissy Vane passed through our doors. She was trained at CWF Mid-Atlantic, went on to Ascent and Developmental in Deep South. No Way Jose came from CWF Mid-Atlantic, and who's starting to do great things in NXT. And, you know, we've had Cedric Alexander and Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett all kind of come out of the CWF program. Cedric was a little bit farther west in Charlotte, but I mean, was with us from, you know, his earliest days in development. So that has really led to a boom in the Carolinas. Cedric and Drew and Trevor and a few others really bursting out on the national and international scene has led North Carolina to just flourish. There's more going on here than at any time I can ever remember. And, you know, CWF is thrilled to have our piece of the pie in that. And I think it's weird, and I always say this, and I do think it's weird. We offer something different, I think, by being so traditional and having that feel of classic, you know, 80s wrestling, so to speak. I think makes us stand out in a world where everyone's trying to be new and progressive and innovative. We kind of dial it back a little bit, and it is more restrained and it is more disciplined in our presentation. And yeah, if that's what you like, and if you miss that element from wrestling, you'll dig CWF Mid-Atlantic. It's weekly episodic TV. My aim is to remind people of, you know, Smoky Mountain or Memphis or Continental or Mid-South or Crockett or whatever, you know, classic territory you love. My aim is to remind people of that, and we've got a great crew that helps make that happen every week.
You talk about, you know, kind of bringing that old school flavor. It's very reminiscent. This is going to sound like a weird comparison, Brother Brad, but it's almost like what Bruno Mars is doing musically, where if you listen to him sonically, it's very much Morris Day. It's very much Prince. It's that 80s to early 90s style of music, but it works today because it's fresh and different, and he puts his own spin on it. So when you talk about CWF having, you know, those similarities to the promotions of days gone by, but being able to do it in a way that completely feels normal and not out of place in 2016 or 2017 and beyond.
Now you mentioned the CWF Mid-Atlantic Dojo. It's developed a lot of talent. You named some of them. But recently we've seen, like, Snooty Fox come out, who looks like he has the look of a blue chipper. You have the Dirty Daddy, who has just an incredible gimmick. And Kane Justice, he seems like he just has natural instincts at getting heat. Tell us about what do you think of these talents, and is it how often you develop the talents to get them onto the television?
We've got guys, and that's another thing. We've got guys, you know, more students in the past 2 to 3 years than we've ever had, as, you know, the reputation continues to grow, and it kind of becomes a thing of, oh, you can train with Trevor Lee, you can train with Andrew Everett, you can train with Eric Royal. It's led to a surge in students in the past few years, whereas before, the training program was kind of inconsistent. We were pulling from a relatively small radius of space. Now we've got people coming from other places to train here. So that's really exciting also. I think the crop of guys that we have coming up are tremendous in very different ways. As you pointed out, you know, Snooty just has that look and that intensity, and has gotten such a following in a short amount of time. You know, he just needs the seasoning. He just needs the time put in, basically, before he is something really, really special. He's already special, but, you know, he just needs to keep putting time in and keep working and keep going other places, and he'll be really, really special. Kane Justice, I kind of feel similarly about. I think he's a blue chipper. I think he's one of those guys that wants it so bad. He wants it too bad to fail. And I think that's very powerful. And I think we're starting to, you know, literally just in the past 6 to 10 weeks, we've started to really learn who he was. Dirty Daddy is tremendously entertaining and tremendously charismatic. And he's starting to come out of his shell a little bit as a person. But the tremendous thing about that is it's such a 180 from who he is in regular life. He's such kind of a quiet guy. And someone else from the school, one of the other guys, hit me up and said, "Hey, man, you've got to hear this dude's idea for what he wants to do." And I was like, "Oh, the brother that's never said 10 words has got an idea for a character." And then he blew everyone away with this character. And this idea for how he wanted to present himself. And yeah, I thought Dirty Daddy and Kane Justice had a phenomenal opening match at Battlecade. Episode 1 from the 3 that we did at Battlecade, I thought it was phenomenal. I thought it was the perfect opening match to set the tone for the rest of the night. I thought they killed it. They maximized their minutes and the time that they had. And I expect big, big things from all those guys this year.
Yeah, I'm with you on that completely. What for me this year, I voted for the Trevor Lee, Andrew Revit was my second favorite match of all the matches I've seen this year. What were some of your favorite matches, angles, and promos from Mid-Atlantic this year, CWF?
Oh, man. Love the Trevor Lee, Andrew Revit match from June. I love Trevor Lee and Roy Wilkins from February, obviously, 105-minute match that a lot of people had some really amazing things to say about, people saying it was the best thing they'd ever seen. It was wrestling presented like a movie. It was that was our opus. That was our, you know, when we set forth on this path, and I had sort of heard some rumblings about, hey, the guys want to do 90 minutes. And I was just like, "Oh, okay, you know, haha." And then nobody else was laughing. And I was like, "Oh, okay." So just giving them that platform for them to create their art was, you know, an honor for me, not feeling the need to have my hands in it. And so, you know, those are two of the top. I love, and I can't speak enough about that Cedric Alexander, when he was already signed to WWE and he didn't have to, he could have just handed it over, came back on very little notice on a charity show, of all things, to pass the torch to Chet Sterling on his way out. That, you know, and I love Cedric, and I've had a wonderful relationship with him for years, but that just, it didn't surprise me because I know what kind of guy he is, but it impressed me still and showed what kind of guy he was, that he made the effort, on a charity show, donated his time to come and pass the torch to Chet on his way out. So that was a really, really special moment for me and kind of, a little bit underrated moment, because I think a lot of people don't know the full story or don't realize that, you know, he didn't have to do that. You know, he could have just said, "Hey, I'm going, here's the belt, here's whatever, thank you very much." But he made the effort to pass the torch to Chet on his way out. And I think that's a really kind of underrated moment of the year for me. Just knowing that Cedric was willing to do that. And Cedric and Trevor Lee had a classic earlier this year. There's been a lot of really, really cool stuff happened this year. I thought it was really, really cool. Everyone locally has known that the CWF Rumble every October was a big deal and was a big night locally, But this year, it kind of speaks to the reach that we have now with social media and with the weekly television show. This year, it was really cool that, you know, a car wanted to come from Chikara and a car wanted to come from CZW. And, you know, people like John Schuyler, you know, held that date open for a year to come back and be a part of it. That was really cool. Just like I said, it speaks to the reach of social media and the reach that CWF has now that has never been available before. You know, for a long time, we were doing a quality product. I don't think it probably wasn't as good as it is now, but a quality product for the same 100 people every week, and nobody was seeing it. So it's really, really cool now that people all over the world are really enjoying the program. And that's why we called it Worldwide, as two reasons, as an ode to, you know, the classic worldwide wrestling, and because, like, holy cow, we have the ability to reach people worldwide now, and they can see the magic that happens in this little room that previously, you know, only people in this county and maybe the next county over could see. So it's a very exciting time for all those reasons.
That's awesome. Let me, I want to talk about Trevor Lee's run as champ, which has been like, I thought he was like the most, incredible world champion in wrestling right now and defending the belt and having classic matches and just presenting himself as the champion. And I kind of akin it to like Rick Steamboat if back in the day when he was like a Mid-Atlantic champion. Who or what did you kind of base his run on?
Honestly, so much of it comes from Trevor Lee. Dude is an artist. And I don't say that lightly. Trevor Lee is an artist, and there have been times when I had a match laid out or an episode of TV laid out or whatever, and Trevor will hit me usually at about 3 or 4 o'clock on the day of the show and, you know, give me the rundown of what's going on, and I'll give him the rundown, and he'll go, okay, what if we do it this way, and get to this instead. And I think every time almost I've gone with his idea. He's a sharp, sharp kid and so smart at getting the most out of people. And I think that's one of the things that gave me such a good feeling about this title run and knew that it was something we really needed to pursue. Was that I knew he would know just organically as a worker, but really as an artist, he would know how to get the most out of the guys that he worked with and the guys that he created art with. So it very much is a collaborative process. This whole epic saga that we've been able to do for the past year plus has been a collaborative effort with me and him and Brad Attitude. And, if I were to say that an inspiration for it or something that I would look to, it really was just kind of bringing that classic title feeling back. Whereas, a lot of times before, and it wasn't their fault and it wasn't my fault, a lot of times before when, let's say, Eric Royal or Danger Z Corey Edsel or whoever had the title before him, it didn't have that feeling because title defenses were a little bit more routine. We have to draw people every 2 weeks, so you would run through and burn through a lot of challengers. And I don't know, with Trevor's schedule the way it is, it lends itself to the aura of the Trevor Lee title defense because you don't get it every 2 weeks like some of the champions in past. It makes it a little bit more special, and then they just take the ball and score touchdown after touchdown after touchdown once the ball's handed to him, and that just makes it even better.
Yeah, the aura's right on. I think that's exactly how I view it as and stuff like that. Tonight, Battlecade will be airing part 3 of the 3. It was like obviously one show, but it split up the 3 episodes on YouTube. what were your like favorite things of the show, or what were you most proud of, or were there things you wish you could have tweaked a little differently?
Man, I hate to harp on it again, but I think the thing I was most proud of was the kids just killing it in the opening match. The Rising Generation League title, sort of our take on the Young Lions Cup, if you follow Chikara. I think they were started at about the same time, actually, which is neat. And that, if you remind me, I'll get back to the Chikara influence on CWF, if you remind me. You know, two guys, Dirty Daddy's got a year, Kane's got maybe a year, and they just killed it in a great, you know, 5-minute opening match that was perfect and hot. So I was super proud of those guys. They killed it. They destroyed it.
Really great storytelling from guys who are that young in the business. I mean, they seem like they have a really strong psychology with the arm work and building to the twist ending. And they had given them the hope spots that Dirty Daddy had. I thought it was an excellent match too.
No, I completely agree. And again, I give full credit to them. It's another thing where it's kind of the same idea as the main event, but a little bit different in the sense of I left those guys alone. Like, I wanted to see what they came up with on their own. Because, you know, I can hold your hand and get you through, you know, whatever, but I wanted to see, you know, it's kind of a trial by fire. I want to see where these guys are in their development and where they are about, you know, their wits about them and everything. And so I wanted to see what they came up with. I think to be perfectly honest, I don't normally pull the curtain back this much, but I think I said 6 minutes twist ending, and that was the most conversation I had with either one of them before the match. I wanted to see what they came up with on their own, and that just made it that much sweeter to see them just soar and shine like that. Eric Royal and Andrew Everett destroyed it, and that's another thing is. The main event at Battlecade, our anniversary show, is the toughest spot every year because not only does it usually have, you know, 3, 4, 6 months worth of hype to live up to from where we've been, you know, bringing this story to a boiling point, but also it has to follow the longest show of the year. It has to follow, you know, usually 8 or 9 more matches that have all been built to a climax or most of them. But that's a tough spot. And you know, putting Eric Royal and Andrew Everett second from the top and then Brad and Trevor on top, I just knew that was going to be a really amazing last hour to the show. And it was, both those matches just completely killed it. And, I think Eric Royal is somebody who is just chomping at the bit. He's ready to travel the world and get his name out. And if you're a promoter within the sound of my voice, you need to get on the ground floor of Eric Royal before somebody else does, because somebody's going to. And he's somebody that's ready to blow up. And, it was a really, really special night. Even like Lee Valiant and Chet Sterling, I thought had a perfect match for their story and for their, you know, spot on the card. And that's another thing I think makes us real special is guys know and understand and wrestle their place on the card. It's not a situation where, you know, guys are trying to take time from others or anything like that. It's a real team environment. It's awesome.
Yeah, Eric Royal, he's a guy who reminds me a lot, a guy who just got his real national break recently is Keith Lee, and I'm from Texas, so I saw him a lot earlier in his career, and he's finally got his national break, and Eric Royal reminds me a lot of Keith Lee, like with the personality, both work a big man style, but they're both also really athletic, and yeah, you're right, I think Eric Royal has a really high ceiling. Now, I got to talk about the multi-man match. I marked out huge on the goggle spot. And if you're a fan of, like, Mid-Atlantic wrestling throughout the history, I mean, it's a famous spot or famous angle with the Great Kabuki and Boogie Woogie Man, and Rob McBride is a trainee of the Boogie Woogie Man, who came up with a spot. I popped huge because not only is it it's a spot that gets over big anyway because it's a great spot, but it's also it if you're a fan of the history of the region, it even it as it resonates a little bit more. So whose idea was that?
It was me and Rob together.
Loved it, absolutely. Loved it.
Yeah, I think it was just kind of a natural. I knew that Kabuki Knee, who Steve Carino gave him that that moniker and that whole thing. He wrestles as Wheeler Utah in CZW and Dojo Wars, and he's fantastic. He's a great, great, great kid. But Steve Carino kind of had this vision for him of like a Muta Kabuki kind of thing, and I responded really well to that. So we kind of just had this idea of get him and Rob together once in November and then again in December. And it was just kind of the natural where you look at each other and you're like, all right, I think we're going to do the Mist tonight. And then I think Rob said, and then I have the goggles in December. And I was like, you got it. It was just a natural, you know, thing. But yeah, just little, I love doing little Easter eggs like that. I love, you know, just little callbacks to, you know, classic stuff like that, I think are cool. And I'm always very happy that everyone seems to kind of share my vision, and no one is like, oh, it's a ripoff Muta and a ripoff Boogie Woogie Man. Well, no, it's an homage. Yeah, it very much is.
Man, just one final question. Obviously, right now, you guys are getting a lot of buzz online. Well, what does the future hold for CWF Mid-Atlantic?
Well, the immediate future holds CWF Mid-Atlantic is the only other place I know of that is going to do a tag team Apocalypto. We're going to do it this Saturday night, and it'll air on Worldwide in, I think, 3 weeks. And, you know, I'm fortunate to have a great relationship with the Hardys, as we've touched on, and the last surviving team is going to advance to face the Hardys later this month. That match will also be on CWF Worldwide as well as Impact Wrestling. So like, that's really cool. We've kind of been brainstorming all week of how we can do the concept of Tag Team Apocalypto justice, and how we can introduce some different, crazy, out of the box ideas and elements into our world. So I personally am really excited about that. I'm really excited about the Cronodal Brothers Tag Team Tournament. That's going to be the last weekend of March, the weekend before WrestleMania, Friday, March 24th and Saturday, March 25th. I'm super excited about that and have been in touch with some tag teams from all over potentially to come in. I think in a nutshell, I would say expansion. And that's not necessarily outside of our comfy little room in North Carolina, but I think it's expanding our reach. I think it's something like Mance Warner against the Dirty Daddy this Saturday night, which I think a year ago would not have been on the table, but we've been exposed to so many new fans from all over that, you know, you have people calling for things that they consider to be dream matches. You know, Nick Richards against Trip Cassidy is this Saturday night. We've had Team IOU, the Carnies, were in one for one weekend last year, and I hope to have them back. You know, I think it's more of that. I think it's more talent from Chikara, talent from CZW, from AAW, from IWA Mid-South, from all over. I think it's growing the network, so to speak, and just introducing ourselves to as many eyeballs as possible, as often as possible, and just keep getting people to subscribe to the YouTube channel, because literally everything we do, we upload 100% free on youtube.com/CWF Mid-Atlantic. We just want to get eyeballs. We just want people to take notice of the amazing crew that we have here. And hopefully there will be a lot more of that coming up this year.
Now, I got a question about the Impact deal. Since recently it's come to light that I guess Jeff Jarrett is now the advisor. Who'd you make your deal with? Was it the previous guys who were in charge or the current crop?
It was expressed to me by another partner here at CWF, so I'm not exactly sure what the chain of command was. You know, we have a great relationship with the Hardys. It would not surprise me if it was a direct line to them. Shane Helms, you know, we have a great relationship with a lot of people that are there, quite frankly. JV, Jeremy Borash, has always been great to me in my dealings with him. But I'm not exactly sure whose call it was. But we received the call and we're happy to make that deal and bring the Impact cameras to the Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium. And that's going to be a really cool experience. If I had more insight, I would give it, but I kind of it was brought to me once the deal had already been made. So if I had more insight, I would share it.
Great. I appreciate it. Stutzy, you have anything you want to plug?
Plug CWF Worldwide every Wednesday night. Like I said, it's episodic television. If you miss Smoky Mountain, if you love Memphis, and I don't want to date us because there's a lot of young fans in their 20s that love us. There's a lot of people that love PWG that love us. If I could put it all in a nutshell, I would say it's wrestling with old school philosophies presented in a modern setting with very modern athletics. I don't think you will watch this and feel like you're watching wrestlers from the 70s and 80s. It's the philosophy that we kind of try to impart. Subscribe to youtube.com/CWF Mid-Atlantic. If you want to, give me a follow at Stutzy on Twitter, Stuttsy. And please, by all means, follow at CWF Mid-Atlantic on Twitter. And if you want to make it a destination, we're in Gibsonville, North Carolina, just outside of Greensboro, about less than an hour or so from Raleigh, hour and a half or so from Charlotte, pretty much in central North Carolina. And we've been blessed with some amazing out-of-state fans who have made the pilgrimage and who have become regulars, which is crazy to me and so flattering that people from states away are making regular trips to come see our events. We're hoping to just keep moving and keep getting more and more eyeballs on us this year and beyond.
Yeah, for people not out there, I mean, for people listening, I'm going to tell you, in my Observer ballot that I turned in, CWF Mid-Atlantic was my favorite promotion, and CWF Worldwide was my favorite television. And you were actually my favorite announce team. You guys were my favorite announce team going. So you guys had quite a bit on my Observer ballot.
Oh, I gotta shout out my man Cecil Scott, who's just tremendous in the booth with me. You talk about a commentary team. It is a team. And I appreciate what you said about writing us in as favorite announcers. But, man, Cecil Scott is really one of the unsung heroes of CWF Worldwide and just brings so much to the table as far as if I'm there to hammer home the narrative and the story points, he's there really to – you know, really draw really, really sharp analysis and bring a real sports feel to things. Best partner I've ever had in my life, other than my wife. He's tremendous. And really, like I said, Cecil Scott is the unsung hero of CWF Worldwide. Along with our wonderful cameraman, Grant Sawyer, who is probably listening to this, but he needs to get back to work editing Images of the Year, which is our annual highlight reel that will debut this Saturday, and then it will be on YouTube shortly thereafter. So, Grant, if you're listening, I appreciate you listening, but get back to work on Images of the Year.
That's awesome. Brad, thanks for joining us. This is Clotheslines and Headlines, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening, folks.
I first put you down for North Carolina, but guess what?
What?
It's been worse. I'm a superstar. Bought me a big old car, 4.6. Black with the balls on the front and the back, and got a button in the middle, make the truck go. But it ain't about that. It's about getting what you're getting and giving them back here. Big fella, half of me in Carolina, I'm trying to get a pole. Mars and Hope, Green County, Hillary.
red, brown's over here, green's over here, pass the table, down on, over.